Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows with the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Wednesday. That means Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday, yeah. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Get those requests in. We will talk about them, and we'll play them a little bit later on. Yeah, it's Wednesday morning. Glad everybody's here, and we're going to have a fun show here. Coming up in just a few minutes, Jerry Vassalatos is going to join us. He's been on the show several times. He is the director of the film Solstice, which is having a special 25th anniversary screening at the Music Box next week. And you can check out solsticemovie.com for more information. And there's a lot to talk about this movie and the making of it. He's got a new movie called Shelter Me that's been making the award circuit. We're going to be talking about that. He is, of course, the guy who runs the 48-hour film project here in Chicago. And we'll touch on that, too. So Jerry's going to join us live in studio. He'll be here in just a few minutes. We are going to talk about, we're going to talk about sports losing streaks. We have the longest sports losing streaks of all time that we'll go through and, like, historically go back in time and look at some of the terrible losing streaks that some sports teams have had. And there's a specific sports team that right now is experiencing a losing streak that is making me very angry. Hawks lost their 8th in a row last night in Winnipeg. We will have the Blackhawks Express a little bit later on. So we're going to talk about losing streaks in the world of sports and some of the worst. Some of these are so ridiculous, they will actually make me feel better about what's going on with the Hawks. So they play tonight at home against the Penguins. And I believe the puck drop is at 7:30. Is it 7 or 7:30? Usually 7:30 if it's at.
I believe it's 7 because it's the Wednesday NHL game.
Okay, so it's 7 o'clock then. Okay, so that's that. We'll see what happens then. So we'll talk about losing streaks. School. There's some news about school lunches that we'll talk about. But then I want to talk about school lunches themselves, like what you had. And what's offered now, if you have kids, what's offered now for school lunches. We'll get into that, reminisce a little bit about that. And then we will rate our favorite holiday cookies from worst to best. And all that and much more. Again, it's Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. You can get your request in now at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. The best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page, and it's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Also, check out our podcast. Subscribe to our podcast. Lots of people do, and we thank everybody for subscribing to the podcast. Go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe. It's free. Every second of every show is podcast and will be automatically sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. There you go. That's what's happening this morning. Let me say hello to my great producer, Dan Shagru. Hi, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
Good, man. How about yourself?
I'm all right. I'm a little upset about the Hawks.
Sure.
It's getting a little crazy, you know? Around the start of the second period, they were down 4-0. And then they did come back. They came back. They clawed their way back 4-3, and then they ended up losing 6-3. This has just been a bad season, man. And there's nothing else to say about it. But anyway, we'll talk about other, you know, there's been a lot more losing streaks.
Sure.
And this is not the longest losing streak that the Hawks have ever had. I'm not sure what that is, but they've lost. A couple of seasons ago, they lost 10 in a row. So this is 8. It's not good. Not good at all. But anyway, so we'll talk about some of these losing streaks, though, are crazy.
Yeah.
You know, like, really? I mean, like, what? Like, some of them are just, you can't believe that they actually happened. But we'll go through some of those and have some fun with that a little bit later on. Yeah. Did you have school lunch when you were a kid?
I did and I didn't. I had a mixture. For a couple of years, I did the school lunch. Other years, I did the brown bag.
Oh, okay. We'll talk about that a little bit later on, too, because there's some news. There's some news that, you know, they've rolled back some of the stuff that the Obama administration did. So now they're allowing, like, chocolate milk again, and you can do not whole grain. It could be any grain, and some of the other stuff that they do. But Yeah. So anyway, that's coming up. Dan, you'll be producing until 5 o'clock. Wild Card Wednesday. How long do you think before we'll get a TV theme song?
We've already got a couple in.
Yeah, people like to take advantage of Wild Card Wednesday and get those TV theme songs in.
Indeed.
And you can do that, too. It's 312-981-7200 for your requests. Let's get into the newsroom and say hello to Vic Vaughn, who's in the newsroom. Hi, Vic.
Yep, good morning, Nick.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, very well.
Okay, all right. So Vic's in the newsroom, and he's covering everything in there. And I am your host this morning here on 720 WGN. Yeah. So... you know, I was watching Jimmy Kimmel before we came into work. I was watching it last night, and he had Nicole Kidman on. And for those people who have not seen any images or commercials or trailers for the movie Destroyer that Nicole Kidman is in, you won't recognize her. She just looks. I mean, it's the transformation that she makes to play the character that she plays in Destroyer is pretty stunning. And Jimmy Kimmel was kind of like asking her, you know, how was that done? How is it possible that Nicole Kidman was made to look very unattractive and terrible in a movie? And she wouldn't kind of give it away. But the first time I saw the trailer for Destroyer, I've seen the movie. The first time, and it's really good, and she's great in it. It's a very heavy movie, though. I mean, you got to be in a specific mood to see this movie, because it's really, I mean, it's really heavy. It's going to knock you out in several ways. But it's one of those performances where she did make this massive transformation. She got a Golden Globe nomination for it. She is probably going to get an Oscar, I think, nomination for it as well, because it's what the last time, you know, remember when she won the Academy Award, she made a transformation too. She had the big fake nose when she was in the hours. And that's when I think that's the last time she won. I think that's when the last Academy Award she won, right? Unless she won another one that I forgot about. But I know The Hours is the one that she did win Best Actress for. And she was very good in that. But she's got a real strong case here to get nominated for Destroyer. And it's really something. If you're a fan of Nicole Kidman, I personally think it's the best performance she's ever given in Destroyer. But again, this is not, you know, happy time. This movie, it's not at all happy time. So, did you find any?
Just the one.
Just the one. It's The Hours, right? Okay. She won for that. Okay. Now, she's won, like, Emmys, and she's won Golden Globes. I think she's won 5 Golden Globes.
Right.
And what did she win the Golden Globes for? I know it's Big Little Lies is what she won the Emmys for. She won 2 Emmys for that, because she won 1 for producing and 1 for acting, and she was talking about how she gave those to her 2 kids. That live that her and what's his the guy she's
Keith Urban.
Keith, I was gonna say Travis Tritt. She's married to Travis Tritt. but she won. So Golden Globe she won for The Hours, I would imagine.
Let's see here. Yes, correct. The Hours, best actress in a musical for Moulin Rouge.
Oh, right.
Best actress in a comedy or musical for To Die For.
Oh, she won for To Die For. She's great in that movie. That was the first movie where, like, I kind of went, oh, Nicole Kidman can act, because she was always pretty and I liked her and stuff, you know. But I remember seeing To Die For and just being like, whoa, wait a minute. Gus Van Sant movie. Great, great movie. That was a terrific movie. She's great in that movie. But anyway, so she was on and she did it. She was great, but she would not tell the secret on how they made her look bad. Because you will not recognize her. If you've seen images from the movie, from this movie Destroyer, it's startling the way, because Nicole Kidman is beautiful. Nicole Kidman is a beautiful woman. And this character that she plays is not, like, has some serious mental issues, has some serious addiction issues, has done some horrible things, and is trying to atone for them. Again, a really heavy movie here. And you know who else is in it? Is, man... Tatiana Maslany from Orphan Black. And she is also, like, dumb, you know, like, not dumbed down, but really, like, looking terrible in it. And, I mean, she's another, like, really beautiful woman. And, like, so it's very strange to see two of these beautiful, and she's got a big part in it, too, Tatiana Maslany, who's a tremendous, anybody who's ever seen Orphan Black knows what a great actress she is. By the way, you know what she's in now? They've got a Broadway production of the movie Network, and Bryan Cranston is playing the Peter Finch role. The I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. And she's got the Faye Dunaway role, and I want to fly to New York right now and see that. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. So anyway, Destroyer opens up in a couple of weeks, and we'll review it on the show. But Nicole Kidman made a very entertaining appearance on Kimmel last night, and I just watched it right before we came down here to work. Okay, let's take a quick break. Jerry, our friend here, is in the PPG Paints green room, and that's Jerry Vassalatos, who's the director of the movie Solstice. We're going to talk about that and more as we get him from the PPG Paints green room and begin our interview right there. We're going to take a break here. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here until 5 o'clock, and it's Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in now, any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. That's also the phone number to call in to jump in anytime you want, and also send us some texts. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll be talking about the longest losing streaks in sports. We're going to talk about school lunches, and we're going to talk about some holiday cookies that have been ranked. And that is all ahead right here on 720 WGN. Right now, though, I would like to welcome back to the show, live in studio with us, is Jerry Vassalatos, who's the director of the film Solstice. And he runs the 48-hour film project here in the Chicago area. And let's welcome Jerry back into the studio. Jerry, welcome back.
Happy holidays, Nick. And thanks for having
me back.
Same
to you. No, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. So this is special. You're busy right now.
Yeah,
because you got a special screening. It's the 25th anniversary of a movie called Solstice. Why don't you tell everybody about how that movie came to be? And it's a Hallmark. It was a movie made for Hallmark, correct?
Well, actually, Hallmark seems to be the channel now that everyone associates holiday films with. But this was originally picked up by Lifetime Television.
Oh, Lifetime, right? Okay, sorry. Yeah. No, anytime there's a holiday film, I immediately think.
Everybody does now because Hallmark does this seasonal campaign where they show holiday movies. But back in 1994. I had completed production on this little short 48-minute movie that I had produced to use as a calling card for myself as a director to try to jumpstart my directing career, my filmmaking career. And fortuitously, I had a producer's representative who presented it to several different cable outlets. I believe he presented it to Showtime, he presented it to USA, he presented it to Lifetime. And this was a time where there wasn't a whole lot of independent film. There weren't stations like the Hallmark Channel.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah. So at that moment, Lifetime Television wanted to have an exclusive holiday Christmas movie associated with their channel that they could brand the Lifetime original holiday movie. Mm-hmm. But they had not commissioned or partnered with any production company to produce that content. So here comes my producer's representative with a film that's finished.
Yeah.
Fit an hour time slot. They stamped Lifetime original movie on it, and it kicked off that annual yearly campaign with Lifetime that they have an exclusive holiday film now associated with their channel. So I was very proud of that because despite the amazing performances of the actors in my film, I didn't have any big names in it. And we were just this small production team out of Chicago.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, potentially we were in front of millions of viewers as a first-time 25-year-old filmmaker, which was really, really exciting at the time.
Yeah. I can imagine. Now, Phyllis, before we get into Solstice and what it's about and all that great stuff, and this really great screening that's coming up at the Music Box, beautiful Music Box Theater, and we got a Toys for Tots drive that we want to get to as well.
Absolutely.
There's a lot to talk about, but let's give everybody your background and how you got started in the world of film.
Gosh, how much time we have? So anyway, I was lucky that when I was in high school, I had the opportunity to take film classes at New Trier. This wasn't something that was common in high schools, but they had a film course. And at that time, I was kind of a not that focused student, but I figured this is a great scam. I can get school credit for watching movies.
Right.
But, you know, we learned about theory. We learned about filmmaking. We were like using Super 8. This is like before video, right? This is like Super 8, actual, you know, handling film, cutting film. So I took a real love for making movies. I learned about editing. I learned about storytelling, camera. And that ended up propelling me to take classes at Columbia College back in the 90s, where I had my more professional training as a filmmaker. So going back in time to 1986, I had an unfortunate set of circumstances fall upon me where I was actually in attendance at Columbia College, taking summer classes, and I would commute back and forth to my parents' house in Wilmette using the train. And I had a freak accident at the Harrison Street subway where I took a misstep. My foot got caught in between the platform and the train of the subway, and I fell back. As the train started pulling out of the station, I my leg got caught. So I ended up losing my leg. Not all at once, but it was pretty badly mangled. So thankfully, to the extraordinary efforts of the Chicago Fire Department paramedics and the doctors at Cook County Hospital, they saved my life. And as a result of that, as sometimes happens, there was a legal case filed for personal injury, and certainly didn't expect that to end up happening. But once the dust settled, like 5 years later, I had this substantial amount of money on my hands that I felt, since no one was going to give me money to make a movie, I may as well take a part of my settlement and end up trying to kickstart my own career by producing this film. And as it turned out, I ended up spending $130,000 on this film, which was probably about three quarters of my settlement.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people were like, is this really smart? And I'm like, I'm going to put it in film festivals. I'm going to get my career started. But people were saying, well, you got to figure out how to make your money back on it also. In is where that producer's representative stepped and was able to get me on television. We got a licensing deal. And thankfully, that exposure kind of helped me kickstart my filmmaking career.
That's great. Well, it's an inspiring story, Jerry, really.
Thank you.
And we'll talk a little bit more. Harry, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Okay, it's Jerry Vassilatos who's with us, director of the film Solstice. You can see it next week at the Music Box Theater, and we'll give you all the information on that. It's the 25th anniversary. And we'll do that after the news, which is next. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in now. Any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about sports losing streaks, some of the biggest losing streaks in sports. We're going to talk about school lunches and a lot more. And we always want to hear from you. Anytime, 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and hang out with us. Stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. My guest right now is Jerry Vassilatos, who's been on the show many times. He's the director of the film Solstice. You know him from being on the show to talk about the 48-hour film project, which returns next year, Jerry. Correct?
It certainly does, yeah. We're hopefully going to get an earlier start like we did this past year and do it earlier in the summer.
Yeah, very, very cool. But you're here to talk about the 25th anniversary screening of your film Solstice, which takes place on the 18th of December next week at the Music Box Theater. We heard what was the inspiration for how it got made. And now let's talk about the actual shooting of the movie. When was it shot? And you shot locally, obviously, and using local actors.
Yeah. So we started production back in 1992. We shot over a holiday season, I think it was November of 92 through February of 93 is when I had completed it. And yeah, we cast locally. Back in the day, you would put out your casting notices through the reader. You'd put your casting notices at local colleges and drama departments.
Right.
Just so happened, though, that my lead actor came on my radar through a very good friend of mine from high school. I knew his sister. Michael Kelly is the actor. His sister, Carrie, I hope maybe she'll be listening or hear this later because she's going to be at the screening next week. Michael was an actor in Chicago, and I had been friends with him kind of on and off, acquaintances. And when Carrie heard I had written this Christmas script and I was going to go into production on it, she recommended I talk to Mike about it. And I'm like, yeah, because there was another feature script that I'd written that I would have loved to cast Mike in that I could have never afforded doing. Solstice was the one that was manageable with the funds that I had. So I met with Mike and he read and he nailed the part and he read against my leading actress, Mary McLeod, who was an actress at the time here in Chicago. Michael has had quite an amazing career since being in Solstice. He went out to Los Angeles, as we all did.
But, yeah.
He's amazing. He ended up kind of parlaying his career in acting and going into writing and producing. And he was the creator of the ABC show Revenge.
Wow.
And he's right now in production on a series for Netflix with Renee Zellweger called What If that will premiere next summer. I'm just so proud of this guy.
Wow, good for him, man.
Amazing to see.
Revenge is a terrific show, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice really, job. Yeah, yeah. That was a really fun show. That really was.
Yeah, I had an opportunity to see him a couple months back because I went out to Los Angeles to shoot some interviews with him and Mary and the assistant director and co-star Jay Lehrfeld, because I was putting together a behind-the-scenes program for the upcoming Blu-ray. But we ended up shooting in finishing production in 93, and I was editing on an old flatbed Steinbeck machine through 93 into early 94 when it was finished, and the producers up took it to Lifetime. And honestly, Nick, I never imagined I would be revisiting this film 25 years later. But was on Lifetime, went kind of dormant. I did a 10-year anniversary DVD release back in 2004, I believe that it was. And since that time, people have wanted to see my film. Friends, you know, oh yeah, I did this movie when I was 25, was on Lifetime. I kind of put it behind me. But the problem was, you can't take older technology standard definition programs and put them on HDTVs.
Yeah.
That was the impetus for me deciding, well, the 25th anniversary is coming up. I've got the original negative elements. I did a crowdfunding campaign. A lot of friends, family, strangers helped me raise the $10,000. A lot of you are listening right now, I know, and I want to say hello to you and thanks for staying up. And we ended up, or I ended up scanning the film in 2K so it can show properly on HDTV now. So once I restored the picture, I decided I've got an opportunity to replace the music, which I was never really happy with because it had an old synth score that kind of served its purpose back in the 90s, but I had always wanted an orchestral score, which reflected the temp tracks I had cut the movie to. Had the opportunity this time out as I was finishing the picture restoration to commission a composer named Balint Shapson, who is originally from Hungary, and we recorded a new orchestral score with a 25-plus piece orchestra.
And you just recently went to Hungary.
September. That's
in September.
Yeah. So I brought the music back. We just finished the final mix a couple months ago. And it honestly feels like a brand new movie.
That's exciting.
I put it behind me in a way. I'm like, it's something I did a long time ago. And now that I'm seeing it the way it should be seen, restored from the original negative elements, the picture clarity, the color restoration, music that actually helps really give a stronger emotional underscore to the great performances. I know a lot of people who may have remembered it from Lifetime back in the day. I'm hoping they'll come out and see it. But what I'm really excited about is introducing it to new audiences because it hasn't been seen for so long, and having the opportunity at the music box is going to be tremendous.
Well, what's the plot? Tell everybody the story of the movie.
So the story is about this young man named Nick Allman, who he's our hero, and he's kind of this lonely, disaffected guy who is not happy with his job. He's just broken up with his girlfriend. He's seeing a lot of things in the world around him on Christmas Eve that kind of disturb him. You know, homeless people, headlines, people getting laid off, you know, from big factories. What's changed?
No. And this is always that time of year, man. It's always that time of year when it happens.
So it's basically following him through his day as he's encountering people that he knows and people that he doesn't know, his friends, strangers on the street, you know, kind of trying to get out of this seasonal funk.
Yeah.
And by the time he ends up where he ends up at the end of the story, he kind of has an epiphany and realizes everything that he's experienced throughout the course of the story was what Christmas should be about. He was kind of a glass half empty guy, and he realizes, no, he should have been a glass half full because he really was not only helping other people himself without realizing it, but getting help and getting the kind of support that a lot of lonely people, a lot of people sometimes deal with at the holidays. And the title Solstice is derived from the winter solstice seasonally being the coldest, darkest time of the year.
Right.
And Christmas happens to fall within the winter solstice. So it operates on an emotional level of seasonally it's cold and dark, and it's like that for a lot of people on an emotional level, which is what he's going through.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how we framed everything.
It's an interesting take on how to make a holiday movie, because a lot of people get depressed during the holidays and have a rough time with it and have a rough go of it. And to have that sort of point of view represented in a holiday film, I think is important and unique.
Well, what I find interesting about it also that I kind of came to realize myself when I was working with the composer talking about the new music we were going to compose, I said, I don't want you to compose the music as a Christmas movie. Compose it as a drama that just happens to take place during the holidays, because that's what it is. It's not really a Christmas movie. It takes place at Christmas, and it certainly deals with issues a lot of people deal with in the holidays. At its heart, it's a drama.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those roots are what a lot of people can relate to, and Nick and his girlfriend Christine and the friends that he has and the people that populate the story. I've heard some people throughout the years kind of liken it to, there's some similar themes to It's a Wonderful Life,
mm-hmm.
you know, as far as the disaffected character who needs to kind of find what the spirit of Christmas is about. And I'm really proud of it.
Yeah.
Revisiting this and restoring the film and doing all the digital cleanup and listening to the master audio tapes that I had to go in and reconstruct the entire sound mix was like a time machine
yeah.
to that time, and remembering I had a really good time, and I'm really proud of the story I have to share with people.
Well, now you get to screen it at the Music Box,
yeah.
which
yeah.
is really exciting. And
yeah.
it's tell everybody when and what time and all that stuff.
Well, what's really exciting about the screening at the Music Box is there's a scene in the film that takes place at the Music Box.
Mm-hmm.
Our character Nick stumbles into their annual holiday sing-along, and this was a thing back in 1993. I think they were 5 years into their annual holiday sing-along. I had participated in one, and it was one of the things that inspired some of the storylines. So 25 years later, having the association with the Music Box, I told the manager, I'm restoring this film. A big scene that propels the story takes place here, and I'd love to screen it for the anniversary. And he's like, of course,
yeah. you know,
bring it back home. So we're showing it next Tuesday, December 18th. Showtime is at 7:30 at the Music Box Theater. It's not just the movie. We're going to have an annual holiday sing-along, like they do with It's a Wonderful Life
yeah.
and White Christmas on other nights. We're going to have, there's also going to be a 10-minute behind-the-scenes featurette that precedes the show. Most importantly, we are co-sponsoring a gift collection drive for Toys for Tots, and we'd encourage anybody that attends to please bring a new unwrapped gift to put in the bin. I'm going to be taking everything over to Toys for Tots the next day. But there's a scene in the movie where our character actually encounters this child who is orphaned, and you know he unwittingly gives her a gift and doesn't really realize that, you know, it's just he reacts and he does something to cheer up this little girl. And as we were preparing for the anniversary showing, I'm like, I really want to team up with a local charity and try to see if we can do some good helping them out. And my publicist said, why don't you look at Toys for Tots? And I'm like, that's actually brilliant, because there's a scene in the movie that reflects what Toys for Tots mission is, bringing joy to children by gifting them.
Right.
And so that's why we chose Toys for Tots to raise to collect toys for.
And bring an unwrapped unopened toy along with you to participate in that. But the Toys for Tots drive has started already at the Music Box. So it's already, if people want to come by and drop off a toy or something like that, it's in the lobby of the Music Box Theater on Southport in Chicago, and it runs through the 18th, the night of your screening, but it's happening right now. It started a couple of days ago.
Yeah, we hope everyone can join us for the screening next Tuesday, but I put our Toys for Tots collection box in the lobby yesterday. So people can drop off a gift from now through Tuesday the 18th, and I'm going to be taking the gifts to Toys for Tots on the 19th.
That's great, man. That's really, really great. This sounds like such a great event. And you said some of the people that worked on the movie are going to be there too?
Hopefully, yeah. Some of the local people from here in Chicago, some of the local actors I'm hoping will participate. Mike really wanted to come in from L.A., but he's wrapping production on his Netflix show.
Working with Renee Zellweger right now.
My God. He took me down to the set, and I'm like, my God, this is just so amazing.
Yeah. That's really good for him, man. Well, that's great. That's great. So it's the 25th anniversary of Solstice. You can see the movie, and it's on Tuesday night at 7:30. There's also a sing-along. There's also a 10-minute behind-the-scenes look at the movie and the film itself, remastered, new score, looks great. And there's a Toys for Tots drive that's happening now through the 18th. So when you come to see the movie on Tuesday night, the 18th, make sure you bring a toy, and it goes to Toys for Tots. That's all great, and it's so cool that it is coming full circle back to the Music Box.
I never thought, back in the day, I wanted to show it there when we finished it, and the older owners, reason it didn't show there. But there are people there now who really are excited about it and recognize the, you know, historical significance of like bringing this movie back, that with a scene that was inspired by what they do there, which is something I wanted to share with the world in our stories. Like, if you were ever in Chicago, you could participate in that sing-along. It's an amazing community event.
Oh, it's a fun, I mean, people love it every year.
Yeah.
Every year they really love it. And the Music Box, the people that run the Music Box now, they know what they're doing.
They absolutely do. And I want to thank Ryan, the general manager there, who's really helped make this a reality, and it's going to be exciting.
And you do the 48-hour...
We partner with them on that, too.
Yeah, the 48-hour film project. You guys partner with them at the Music Box on that as well. So, and it's one of those, it's one of the special places here in the city.
Absolutely.
And, you know, one of the few
magical
remaining beautiful movie palaces, you know, that you can go to, you know, with the organ and the stars on the ceiling and
the organ, the sing-along that we...
Yeah.
So the organist who performs there now, Dennis Scott, I think it was his third or fifth year performing at the Music Box when we shot the movie there. So Dennis, who's in our movie, is going to perform.
He's in the movie and he's performing. That's great.
He's their house organist, so he's going to be there leading the sing-along because he still works there.
Very cool. Very, very cool. All right, Jerry, hang on. There's a few more things I want to talk to you about.
Thank you.
And everybody check out solsticemovie.com for more information. Solsticemovie.com. And tickets are available at the Music Box, on the website.
At the Music Box. We're linked at solsticemovie.com. There's a click-through to the Music Box website where you can get your tickets in advance.
Okay, great. All right, more with Jerry Vassalatos right after this on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Wildcard Wednesday, get your requests in now. Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. And at 5 o'clock, coming up is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. And coming up in just a few minutes, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN Radio. We are chatting with Jerry Vassalatos, who's the director of the film Solstice, which is playing at the Music Box Theater on Tuesday night, the 18th, 7:30. There's going to be a sing-along. There's a Toys for Tots, Tots Drive. You should guys come out and see the movie and support it. And it's solsticemovie.com, solsticemovie.com. I want to come back and talk a little bit more with Jerry. Jerry, your new film is Shelter Me.
Well, it's not a film yet. It's a script.
Oh, it's a script. Okay.
Yeah. No. So, yeah. Well, I'm developing a feature film. It's called Shelter Me, and we've done really well in a couple of screenwriting contests. And I'm using those accolades to try to help raise development money to do casting and raise financing for the film. So, yeah, that's what I've been.
We talked about it the last time we were here about what it was about and everything. It's an interesting. But you've been making the circuits. Then you won first prize in the Los Angeles Independent Film Festival screenwriting contest.
Yes,
and that's congratulations.
Thank you very much. Well, it gets people to pay attention. It's like when you're talking about a script and a project, you're trying to get off the ground. And it's, people are hearing about so many projects, and then once you win an award, it's like, oh well, maybe we should pay attention to this because other people have recognized the merit of this script and that it's got an audience.
Yeah. And so that's really great, and good luck with that.
Thank you.
And you're making the circuits with the script for Shelter Me, and also now let's briefly the 48-hour film, the 48-hour film project. You want to get it underway a little bit earlier this year in the summer. Really briefly, tell everybody what that's about in case they.
Well, hopefully they'll tune in. They'll hear me when I come back.
Yeah.
So the 48-hour film project is a filmmaking competition that takes place every year in Chicago. Takes place every year worldwide, and filmmakers are challenged to make a 4 to 8 minute movie within a 48-hour time frame. They're given a set of elements at the kickoff, which are a character name, a character profession, a prop, and a line of dialogue on a Friday night. And then by Sunday, 48 hours later, they have to return with that short movie that we then have a panel of judges look over. And we end up screening all of the films at the Music Box Theater, our wonderful partner, 2 weeks later after the judges have managed to go through everything. Now, the winners of the 48-hour film project locally end up going on to compete against other cities nationally with a shot at going to the Cannes Film Festival.
Yeah.
So, 2 years ago, it's been 2 years now.
It's been 2 years, yeah.
Chicago made it to the Cannes Short Film Corner for the first time, and I was so proud of our filmmakers because, as the city producer, I really want to see us succeed, and I want to see my filmmakers put us on the map, and they did it 2 years ago.
We had those guys on guys and gals on that night before the Cannes Festival. So they were very excited about it. And we've talked to you about this for a few years now, and had the filmmakers on. The astonishing thing about this is what these filmmakers are able to accomplish in 48 hours. Like the film that won just this past year was a boxing movie.
Yeah.
That was sort of inspired by Tarantino and things like that. And it was shot so beautifully and it was put together so well. It's astonishing that it was done in 48 hours. And that's the case with a lot of these movies. These are very talented filmmakers who work under pressure really well.
I'm a little envious of modern day filmmakers because they've got the digital technology I didn't have back in the day.
Right.
But, it levels the playing field. So if you have that talent, you've got the tools available to pull something off fast within a short time frame.
Yeah. All right, and is there a website where people, if people are interested in possibly joining up?
Sure. 48hourfilm.com/Chicago. You can bookmark that. Keep an eye on it. We'll probably start announcing dates April or May.
Okay.
So
keep that in the
back.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned a little bit earlier your unfortunate accident, but out of this came the Sandpad Land Pad. Yeah. What, tell everybody about this.
So this is, yeah, so this is kind of funny. Not funny, but I used my personal injury money to make my film, to jumpstart my filmmaking career.
Right.
Ironically, I like to stay active. I like to swim when I'm not wearing my artificial limb. I'm on my crutches. Trying to get across a beach to the ocean when you want to swim is literally impossible when you have crutches, because your crutches go into the sand, you sink. So what was this, like 8 years ago? I'm thinking, I know what I need. I'll look online. I, these discs that are supposedly supposed to attach to the bottom of your crutches that will get you across the beach. And right. I looked, and there was no product that was manufactured. Nothing. Nothing to address this problem that amputees with their crutches would face.
Yeah.
So I teamed up with my father, who is an industrial designer. He's retired now, but we created this, what I was imagining I should find very easily, and we have dubbed it the Sandpad Land Pad All-Terrain Stabilizer. And at the time, I thought it would just be something that would help amputees with their crutches. But since then, we've modified the product so that cane users can use it. It's not just for the beach and the sand. It's for everyday use on all terrains, flat terrain, grass, mud, snow. You can use it everywhere. So I've been marketing this product for the past 5 or 6 years. We've got some wholesale partners. We've got a website, thesandpad.com. If you know anybody that's got a mobility issue that uses canes or crutches, I would really recommend and hope that you use our product, because people have been able to stay more mobile and more active with it.
That's great.
When I was visiting Michael, my actor in California, and he was asking about it, he's like, man, you've really managed to stretch out this injury thing to all these different areas to sustain yourself. And I'm like, well, yeah, you got to kind of think outside the box.
Yeah.
And thankfully,
well, you were talking half glass, half yeah. full, half empty. That's right. Definitely half full for sure.
But the exciting thing about the sand pad was that I thought I was solving my own problem, and I realized there were all kinds of people that could benefit from this invention that we created. So we've had some success with it. I'm trying really, really hard to find a major medical manufacturer to do a licensing deal, because I'd really like to see this thing worldwide. It's patented, it's protected, but it should be out there worldwide. So yeah. Anybody that's traveling has access to this that might have mobility issues with a cane or crutches.
TheSandPad.com.
Yes.
TheSandPad.com.
Thank
well, you're
Nick,
all
for
over the place.
That.
Of
I appreciate
course.
That.
You're all over
that.
The place, Jerry. Jerry Vassalatos, thank you so much. And I hope you sell out the screening on Tuesday,
thank
and I
you.
Hope you get a lot of toys for Tots.
Me too.
And congratulations on everything that's happening and the 25th anniversary of the movie. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, and we are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich will have the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. You've been Wildcard Wednesday, yeah! Get your requests in now. Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about school lunches a little bit later on. We're going to rate some what are the best holiday cookies. And now we're going to talk about the longest losing streaks in sports. Let me ask you, Vic, you moved around a lot. Do you have what the sports teams that you follow? I know now
yeah.
that you know you're here in Chicago, so
right.
obviously you're rooting on the Chicago teams.
Yeah, which is a change for me, because I was a Dallas Cowboys fan my entire life till I moved to Chicago in the late 90s and just got Bears fever. I love the Bears now, 100%.
Yeah. So you were a Cowboys fan.
So after they had a big winning streak in the 90s.
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact years, but I think they won three in the 90s. They were considered, you know, a dynasty, and three Super Bowl championships, I believe. But before that, after the, it was in the early 80s, I think it was an NFC championship game. If not, it was the game before that. The 49ers just beat them with a, I think they call it the miracle throw. But Montana, I think, threw
Joe
it.
Joe Montana.
But, yeah.
Sure.
But after that game, they just went on a decline and just stunk.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the longest streak was, but I think before Jimmy Johnson took over, they must have had like a three and, I think they had like a three win season.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there was a stretch for you as a Cowboys fan where you felt the pain of the losing streak.
Yeah, I think I felt it for almost 10 years.
Now, were you a baseball fan at all?
Not a huge baseball fan until I moved to Chicago and became a Cubs fan.
Right.
But
right. Yeah.
I would say my and even with basketball. Now, growing up and moving around in the country, you know, in different states from I think California, Texas, New Mexico.
Right.
growing up to the age of, you know, graduation, graduating high school, I was a Bulls fan, believe it or not.
Is it? Well, so, yeah, there was a period of time where I think everybody was a Bulls fan.
Everybody was, exactly.
Yeah, so, yeah. But that's interesting. I mean,
if you're a Bulls fan now, you're looking at, it's rough.
No, the Hawks and the Bulls are just are depressing hockey and basketball fans citywide.
Exactly.
It's just depressing. It really is. You know, it's because, you know, Vic, I'm born and bred here, you know, born and raised, you know, six blocks away from Wrigley Field on Addison. And I've been a, you know, Chicago sports fan, you know, obviously my entire life.
Right.
And I'm always interested in people who have moved and where their alliance is. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I always find that fascinating.
I stuck with the Cowboys my entire life, even overseas, everywhere I went. And then for some reason, when I got here, and I've lived all over, and I never took on the home team wherever I was at. I was always a Cowboys fan.
Right.
Something about the Bears living in Chicago. In fact, I don't even care if the Cowboys are on anymore.
I was going to ask you was, do you still follow the,
not
the Cowboys?
Not at all.
No,
not
that's interesting.
Just 100% reversal.
Did you live in Texas the longest?
California the longest. Yeah, 15 years old, then moved to New Mexico, and then a little time in Texas.
Okay.
Right.
So, and then, but it was the Dallas Cowboys that got you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I'm always fascinated
by... Well, you know why, but my dad was born and raised in Texas. And so he was a Cowboys fan, and then he relocated with my mother and us, and then they had me in California. So I grew up near the Bay Area, so 49ers fans everywhere. And for some reason, there was like a rivalry there with the 49ers and the Cowboys. So it was, you know, I had on the Cowboys jerseys.
Were the Raiders in Oakland at that time?
Yeah, I was actually closer to Oakland. Yeah, they were, absolutely. All my friends growing up were actually Raiders fans because we were actually a little closer to Oakland than we were San Francisco.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. That's crazy.
Actually Googling a while ago, what things you can do when your team sucks, and there were a couple of them. Dan. I found there's a couple articles out there with...
What can you do when your team sucks?
That's what
you
kind of scanning them quickly.
Well, what were some of the?
I think I found only a couple articles. Maybe we should write one, an updated version.
Yeah, because I'm wondering what I can do. I mean, there's a hockey game tonight, and I'm not looking forward to it. And that doesn't happen very often.
I think the main thing out of the three I found were basically just don't take it so seriously.
Yeah.
But it is a serious thing when
people
you're a sports fan.
It's not just the game when
you're a sports fan, is it?
Let me just say this: if you were it's an experience to watch a Cub game with my father. Let me just say that right now. But my dad has been a Cubs fan. He's the biggest Cubs fan I've ever met in my life. And my dad will be, the Cubs have been good. You know, they've been great for a few years and then good for last year they were good, but, you know, didn't quite cut it. But they've been in contention now. You know, now they're considered a team. Every year now, they're considered a contender and a team that will more than likely make, you know, the postseason, which was not a usual thing for the Cubs at all.
Right.
For decades and decades.
Nobody ever got here.
And so now, you know, but my dad, when they were at their worst, and there were a lot of seasons when the Cubs completely sucked. And we know this. I mean, that's the legend of the Cub fan. You know, the charming. What do they call them? Losers.
Lovable losers.
Lovable losers. Yeah. There it is, right there. The lovable losers. I will tell you this. My dad, if the Cubs are 20 games out of first place, okay, and you know 30 games under 500. And it's late September, my dad will still be sitting on the edge of his seat yelling at the TV. I'm not
exactly
kidding. That's the way my dad is, you know, about the Cubs. And he's all second only and he's a big Hawks fan too, in that regard. But like, I've never seen a bigger Cub fan. And my dad takes it very seriously, very seriously.
It's almost like a tribal thing.
It is. You know, it really is.
You know, I may not know you, but if you've got a Bears jersey on and I'm at the game, you're my friend. We're in the same tribe. You know, it's kind of like a...
It is. It is, and it's kind of an unspoken thing, you know? It's funny because we're going to talk about longest losing streaks in sports because some of these are ridiculous because the Hawks are on a losing streak that's really very painful to experience right now. But the other thing that I wanted to mention was, as I was talking with Vic, people who are not from here, 312-981-7200, what team do you, out-of-town team in any sport, any professional sport, do you support? And I know, Dan, that there are many bars that cater to out-of-town teams, and I'm trying to remember which ones. And I know there's a Pittsburgh bar on, is it, I think it's on Diversey. I think it's on Diversey. I know there's a Pittsburgh bar because I have friends who are from Pittsburgh, and you got to find
Jerkins.
Yeah, that's it. That's the place, right? Is that on Diversey?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a big time Pittsburgh place because I've gone there to watch some games with my friends who, you know, Pirates fans and Steelers fans and stuff like that. And that place will be hopping tonight. Thinking about that, but I always find it interesting when people still support the team that they, you know, the city where they grew up or where they have the most memory. And when they move away, how do they do that? How do they celebrate that? I got my ex brother in law. When he was my brother-in-law, we were really, really, really tight, Ryan and I. And, he was my best man at the wedding, the second wedding that I had. He lives in Detroit, and spent a significant amount of time in Michigan, but he's a Hawks fan. Okay. I mean, like, he's a big time Hawks fan. Like, he will go to the Joe full on Hawks regalia. You know what I mean? Well, I saw a picture. He posted a picture now. He just got married. Okay, he just got married. I guess it was like 3 months ago. He just got married, and so he posted a picture on his Facebook page, and I could have killed him. He posted a picture. He's at the Joe with his wife, and the hashtag is hashtag is Wings fan by marriage. I could have killed him. I was like, no, you can't do that. You can't do, especially the Red Wings. You can't go from the. You know, you can't like the Hawks and the Red Wings. You can't do that. It's not a rivalry that is as big as it used to be. Now, I guess it's the Blues. That's the big, you know, the biggest, probably the biggest rivalry we have. There's a few, but it, I mean, for me, it's going to be the Red Wings forever, as far as I'm concerned.
I'll use my household as an example, a divided household.
Yes,
Jeannie's a Packers fan. I'm a Bears fan. That's what your friends should
do. Sunday's going to be interesting at your place, man.
It always is. But I'll tell you what, this year it's a little more fun.
Oh, it is. And you know what? And especially this game. You know what I mean?
Like, huge.
Yeah. I mean, now, Dan, you obviously, you grew up here. North Side.
Yep.
So Cubs fan, obviously. Bulls fan as well. I mean, obviously, I know you're a huge Bears fan.
Right.
I know that.
Yeah,
but all the Chicago sports teams.
Yeah, you know, I was the right age for the, you know, the Dynasty Bulls.
Yeah,
you know, I was just a kid and just old enough to kind of appreciate what was going on, and you know, things like that. Blackhawks not so much because I was part of that generation that never watched them on TV
because you couldn't.
Right. So that was kind of a late addition. You know, especially now working here and interacting with those guys on a more-on-one basis that has elevated it, but obviously just getting to see the games.
And we've been broadcasting the games now for 10 years.
Yeah.
10-year anniversary this year for the Hawks being broadcast here at GN. I think we got a few more years on the contract, too.
Yep.
So, but, yeah, I mean, I could understand why hockey wasn't... Not, I don't know if you know this, Vic, but there was a period of time when you couldn't see the Hawks games here
in
Chicago.
Yeah, I did know that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most ridiculous decision ever. Ever. I mean, it was just Bill Wirtz made a statement one time saying there are only 18,000 Hawks fans in this city and they all go to the Chicago Stadium. Like, what are you kidding me?
Yeah, he was a little off.
Way off there. And then you see how it changed, how this city became a Hawks town. And now
it's really cool to see how the city goes out for the championship parades versus other cities.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and it's,
but this has always been a hockey town. This has always been a big hockey town. And it's just that the owners of the Hawks for a long period of time wouldn't acknowledge that, charging people to watch the games if they showed them at all. I mean, it was just so stupid. I mean.
So you have to listen on the radio back then? Is that how you kept up with your team?
You would listen on the radio, or you could pay. You'd have a special pay package
you
could
like
get.
Like a pay-per-view type.
Yeah, just to watch not even all the games. So it was tough, man. I mean, it went to a lot of games, and I've always gone to a lot of Hawks games. But it was tough. That was a period of time. It was really tough to be a Hawks fan. And then when they changed all that, that's when everybody embraced it, and it's so. But we're having a hard time. Hawks fans are having a hard time right now, man. It's been a rough year. If you guys are, there are a couple of things that are out there. We're going to talk about the losing streaks in sports, the longest losing streaks in sports, and if you are from a different place. Do you still maintain allegiance to that team, even if you live in Chicago? So 312-981-7200 is the phone number here on WGN. Trying to put a nice spin on what's happening with the Hawks because it's bothering me right now. This is usually my favorite time of year. It's hockey season, and I'm just like, what? Christina choosing Robert Preston with Chicken Fat. Robert Preston, music man. You know, Robert Preston was such an incredible actor. He could pretty much do anything. But my favorite performance by Robert Preston. Well, first of all, I got to say, it's Nick DiGilio, by the way. Just so we can remind everybody, we're in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. And we are talking about your sports allegiance. If you live here in Chicago, but you're from another place, how do you support that team? And do you still support that team? And do you care at all about the Chicago teams? And then since the Hawks are on a losing streak, we are also going to mention throughout this morning the longest losing streaks in sports. So just to make us Hawks fans feel a little bit better. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text and Wildcard Wednesday requests. 312-981-7200. So anyway, Robert Preston, he was phenomenal. He's phenomenal in Victor Victoria. I just want to mention Victor Victoria because it's a great movie. But man, Blake Edwards made this movie, Dan, called SOB back in 81. And it was Blake Edwards basically lashing out at Hollywood, and it's a really brilliant movie. Like brilliantly funny. Richard Mulligan, Julie Andrews shows her boobs in it. She was married to Blake Edwards. Julie Andrews married to Blake Edwards, and they thought it would be like really amazing, you know, to see Mary Poppins show her boobs in a movie, and she did it, and it was sort of this landmark moment, you know. But anyway, it's a real dark satire of Hollywood, and William Holden is in it, but I gotta say, Robert Preston in that movie, it's one of my favorite performances, and it's the first movie that Rosanna Arquette ever appeared in. A very small role, but she's in it. But anyway, SOB, it's a classic movie. If you've not seen it, it's classic. It's one of Blake Edwards' best movies. There was a period of time when Blake Edwards made about six movies in a row that were just astonishingly good. Like, you know, from a couple of because he did the Pink Panther series. He was responsible for the Peter Sellers Pink Panther series. But between 10 and SOB and Victor Victoria, that was like three in a row. He made those movies in a row. That's what we call a streak, the opposite of a losing streak. Right there. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So Dan, what was the most, you know, as a sports fan, as a fan, what was the most depressing stretch for you? Like in terms of, I mean, obviously being a Cubs fan for forever, you know, was rough.
Yeah. You know, and the last couple of years of the Bears, yeah, has been rough as well, because there was just no imagination. And, you know, if I can predict what's going to happen, that's not a good sign in terms of play calling. And they got drubbed last year by the Eagles, and it was just, ugh, I just remember feeling physically sick.
Yeah.
But, you know, the interesting thing about the Cubs was that, you know, that before they flipped the switch and got good, there were so many teasers. Yeah. You know, that was when Arrieta had his unbelievable streak where he just had 25 straight games, or just, you know, one earned run or less. And so it was uplifting, and you're like, okay, there's evidence here. But then, you know, they'd find a way to lose, and it's just like, yeah, you know, having you know, the light shone a little bit and then, yeah, just completely dashed. Those were kind of tough, weird yo-yo days.
I can give you two years in a row, Dan. 2007, 2008 for the Cubs. 2008 Cubs up until the 2015, 2016 Cubs. The 2008 Cubs, in my opinion, were the best team, the best Cubs team in my life. Well, no, because the 69 Cubs and the 68 Cubs. I mean, but I was in my remembrance of being a Cub fan, of being a conscious Cub fan. The 2008 Cubs lineup was one of my favorite teams of all time, and they got swept by the Dodgers. And I was so angry. I was so angry because 2 years in a row that happened. And so 2007, 2008, and obviously 2003 was a rough year. There are a lot of rough years being a Cubs fan. But, you know, it's just, I don't know. What's the longest losing streak? I wonder what the longest losing streak for the Cubs in a single season was. Because it's got to be pretty bad, right? Because they spent so many years being terrible that there has to have been a time where they had like the longest losing streak. I know that they were on a pretty staggering losing streak when Lee Elia had his classic rant about.
That's true. There was also in 1997 when they started the season 0-14.
Oh, God, that's right.
Quick search seems to be that's the
and that, by the way, was that was that I think that was the first year Cap was here because he stayed
did you know
what he did?
I remember now that you're mentioning
he
it,
went
yeah.
he slept up on a billboard across the street from Wrigley until they won a game. Did you know that was like his little, that's what Cap, I think that was his first season, I think that was his first year here, I think that was Cap's first year. He had hair, I know that. But yeah, he stayed up on a billboard. He slept on a billboard. I think he started at like, I think, I'm not kidding. I think he started at like 0-8, at the 0-8 mark. So he was up there for, you know, like six more games. Sorry, my math is off. So he was up there for almost a week. I totally remember that. So anyway, yeah, it's rough. All right, 312-981-7200. Where is your allegiance in terms of teams if you're not from Chicago? And we'll get into more losing streaks right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? Continues with any artist, any song, anything. 773 area code requesting the theme from Love American Style. Classic. A classic. By the way, we have some breaking news about Theresa May. She is to face a no-confidence vote amid the Brexit chaos. And we're going to talk at the top of the hour, Dan?
Yes, we're hoping to confirm that in the next few minutes, but that's the plan.
We're going to talk about it at the top of the hour with, who are we going to talk with, Fred?
Yep,
Fred Weintraub. Okay, so we'll talk about that and get the details on that, but this is... Not a good sign for Theresa May, and we'll talk about that because that's breaking news worldwide. We'll get to that at the top of the hour, sorting all that out. Meanwhile, we are talking about losing streaks in sports and sports teams that you have an allegiance to, even if they're not from this city, and losing streaks in general. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm all right.
Yeah, the Cubs ought to give out loyalty awards. I would win one. I've been a Cubs fan ever since I listened to WGN, and that includes like 67, 68 before the 69 Cubs ever came on the scene. But anyway, 1972, I went with a teacher down to Mexico, and I still was following the Cubs because you could get the like New York Times or something down there. Anyway, I picked up the paper on my 17th birthday, which was July 17th in 72, and I read that Leo DeRocher got fired.
Yeah.
And 72 was not a pretty good year for the Cubs. And the other big year I remember was 1980 when Preston Gomez, who had been the manager for the San Diego Padres, managed the Cubs, and he got fired mid-season, and Joey Amalfitano, who was like the third base coach, had to take over the Cubs.
Right, yeah.
I really do remember 97, and so I often get out a book called Wrigleyville at my library and read it, and it recounts all the lineups and all the winning seasons and all the losing seasons.
Yeah, I've got that. I bought that book for my dad. He's got that.
Oh, it's excellent, man. I mean, it. You know, with any minor player that ever played for the Cubs mentioned in that book.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Vince Lloyd and Lou Boudreau were the radio announcers for the Cubs?
Of course, yeah. I grew up on that, yeah.
When did they step down? Do you remember?
When did Vince Lloyd and Lou Boudreau? Oh man, it would have to be early 80s. That would be my guess.
They were still together around 81.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm not really sure. I couldn't pinpoint. I don't know the year exactly, but my guess would be in the early 80s at some time. That would be my guess.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I mean, but that, I mean, to me, they were the ideal radio announcers.
No, they were great. They were fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were great.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, John.
Uh-huh. All right, bye.
Bye. There you go. Yeah, Lou Boudreau and Vince Lloyd, they were fantastic. 312-981-7200 is the phone number here, and we're going to be talking about losing streaks. Lou Boudreau was in the booth until 1987. Wow. Okay. All right. I didn't know that. That seems, I don't know why I it seems that it was, you know, he was there for the 84, obviously, because the 84 season was such a big season. So we would remember that. But Boudreau was there until 1987. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to jump in here. We're talking about team loyalty and, of course, losing streaks. And we'll get to some of the longest losing streaks in sports ever. Terry says, Nick, remember the movie Diner when the guy made his fiance take a Baltimore Colts quiz? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. That's a great movie. That is a really great movie. Now, Dan, that in the movie, he makes his wife take a Baltimore Colts quiz before he will marry her. If she doesn't pass, they're not getting married. That's how serious a Colts fan the guys were in the movie. 815 area code says, I paid for on TV to get the Hawks games in the 80s. That's right. You know, there was a subscription television thing called On TV. Dan, you have any memory of that?
I do not.
On TV was like, it was before cable came to the city. There was On TV and there was Spectrum. Those were the two sort of pay channels. We had Spectrum. For some reason, we had, at my house, my parents and I had Spectrum. But most people had On TV. On TV was more popular. On TV was, what happened was, Channel 44, you know, WSNS, Channel 44 would broadcast, and then at night they would go off, and it would become On TV, and the signal would be scrambled. You know the beginning of American Pie?
Yep.
You know what I'm talking about? When he's trying to watch porn and it's scrambled? That's what Channel 44 would look like in the evening, because that's when On TV would take over. And they would show movies, you know, that, well, like cable now, but they were only on for like 4 hours, 4 or 6 hours, because they would do, I think they would do like a 6 o'clock movie, an 8 o'clock movie, and like a 10 or 11 o'clock movie. So they weren't even on all night. It was just like each night, each evening, On TV would come on. And so On TV kept getting more popular and more popular. And they signed a deal. The Hawks signed a deal with On TV where you had to pay for On TV in order to see the Hawks games. So it was just so stupid. But it's so funny now that, you know, you look back at that and On TV was like a big deal. If you had Spectrum, it was a big deal. You could watch movies. You know, they were R-rated movies, uncut. It was that kind of thing. And it was just such a big deal. And now, you know, there are 900 channels where you can watch anything you want at any time, you know. But like On TV was a big deal. And you'd pay for it monthly. I can't remember. I think it was $20 a month or something.
So this was Channel 44. How did that weave into the old Harry Carey Pearsall days? Because weren't they?
It
on
wasn't around. Yeah, well, they weren't around at that time. By that time, yeah, no, they were still on. I guess they. Yeah, boy, that's a good question. I don't remember. I don't remember what they did with the broadcasts. I'm sure they had the White Sox games on somewhere at that time. But, I mean, this was the early 80s. You know, like this was like when I was in high school. So it was like, you know, like 80, 81, 84 or something like that up till that time. And obviously Harry left, you know, in 80. When did he come to the Cubs? He came to the Cubs in like 82, I think. Didn't he come to the Cubs in like 82 or 81 or something like that? So maybe that was post-Pearsall time. But they would show that, you know what I think it was, Dan? You could get Sox and Hawks games on TV. I think that's what it was.
Okay.
Like they paired them up, I think. I don't remember specifically. But yeah, they would take Channel 44's signal and scramble it, and it would become on TV, and you'd pay $20 a month, you know, to see some movie.
Harry was 81.
Harry was 81, right. So by that time, I guess Harry had already left. So Emo says, don't forget the 0-16 Browns or the 16-0 Dolphins. Nobody, Bears fans, don't forget the 16-0 Dolphins. It's rubbed in their face constantly. And it's also, you know what's really amazing about that fact, Dan? Is that, you know, the 16-0 Dolphins, they're always, you know, they've got that, you know, they've got that for, you know, so far, you know, forever. But the year that the Bears could have done it was the Dolphins that beat them. That's like the real killer moment.
Sure.
The 0-16 Browns. Now, didn't they started this season with a tie? Didn't the Browns start?
Start the season with a tie. Yes.
I think they go 0-16, but they went more than 0-16.
Right. I think they
because you combined the season before.
Yeah. 0-19. I believe it.
Oh, they went 0-19, and then they come out. I remember, because I've got a couple of Cleveland friends who like posted on Facebook, at least they didn't lose. Hey, the Browns didn't lose. What's their season been like now?
Actually, it's been pretty good.
Has
they fired the coach and the offensive coordinator who were causing a bit of drama behind the scenes, and they've really taken a step forward. So they're considered one of the better young teams in the league.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Good for them. Yeah, that's right. The 0-19 Browns. Then they open up the season with a tie. I just think that I don't know why I find that so hilarious.
Texters are letting you know Sox were on Sports Vision.
Sports Vision, right. God, I forgot. Man, I forgot all of that stuff. Sox were on Sports Vision. Correct. 773 area code says I live in a divided house. My wife is a Green Bay fan and I'm a Bears fan. That sounds like Vic's house. Steve says, I was transferred to Chicago from Minneapolis in 1983. I will probably never move back there, but I still root for the Minnesota Vikings. This is probably because I saw them lose 4 Super Bowls, and I still cannot hear the words 65-toss power trap. The play Hank Stram called on the sidelines without getting ill. Um. 870 area code says, I live in Arkansas. In terms of college sports, it's Oklahoma State. For football, it's Green Bay, and for hockey, it's the Hawks. Wow, that's all over the place. Truly is all over the place. Dan in Michigan, Nick, try being a Detroit Lions fan. 61 years and no Super Bowls with only one playoff win in those 61 years. Being a Lions fan is the worst type of thing you can be, and I'm out. I didn't know that. 61 years? Oof. Yeah, I don't follow football close enough. That's pretty brutal, though, man. Jeez. Dan, are there certain, he talks about this, the Hank Stram call from the sidelines. He can't even think about it without getting ill. We have a bunch of those, right, as Cub fans and as fans of sports in general?
Sure, the individual plays that just kill you.
Yeah, I mean, just ridiculous, man. 2003, routine double play. Thank you very much. It wasn't Partman's fault. That's all I'm saying. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to come back, talk about longest losing streaks in sports, and where is your alliance for your team, if you are not from Chicago, who do you root for, and how do you do that? Are there certain bars or places that you go to? Do you have a club that you have? A buddy of mine is a huge Raiders fan. Even when they were in L.A., when they moved to L.A., he stayed with them. And he's in like a Raiders club that exists, and they go to certain bars and watch them and stuff like that, then he remains a big Raiders guy. So, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Listen, we're still working on after 3 o'clock. Fred Weintraub, are we going to talk to him?
Yes, we got to confirm now.
Okay, we're going to talk with Fred Weintraub about what's going on in England. Theresa May is facing a no confidence vote. We'll get all the details and the story behind that coming up because it's breaking now. You see, this is how it works when you live in a different time zone. The news never sleeps, people. And neither does WGN. So there you go. All right, let's take a break. We'll return. 301 area code with the Diver Dan theme song. Was that dedicated to you, Dan?
He did not say if it was, but I will take it.
Okay. Diver Dan. You do any diving, Dan?
I have once done the scuba thing. Not the scuba, the snorkeling.
The snorkeling,
it.
Yeah. Okay. That was the Wild Card Wedensday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. That's a perfect example of Wild Card Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, and that's Diver Dan. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text as well. 312-981-7200. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. We've been talking about losing streaks and your allegiance to teams, even if you don't, if you're not from Chicago. How do you keep track of your teams? Well, let's get into some of these losing streaks. How about this one? The Northwestern Wildcats. The Northwestern Wildcats' 34-game losing streak is the longest in Division I football history. I didn't know that. If we bring this up to Dave, will he be very upset if we talk to Dave about this?
Probably.
During the team's winless 1981 season, the Wildcats were outscored 505-82. That's an average of 40 points per game. Oh, my God. That's ridiculous. Was Dave going there then? I bet Dave was going there then. Wouldn't you think 1981? I bet Dave was going there then.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Oh, that's terrible. Is Dave in this morning? Is Dave doing sports?
I believe he is. I don't think there's any Northwestern.
Can you remind me that we can maybe mention this when Dave comes in?
Sure. Way to start off his morning.
We could start off his morning and then lead right in. We can lead right into the Blackhawks Express. That would be a nice segue. We can talk about the 34 game losing streak for the Wildcats, and then the 1981 season where they were outscored 505-82.
Based upon the picture that is included in the article, I believe that was the Denny Green years.
Oh, boy. Well, okay. All right. We know who the Bears are what they thought we were. They were. We thought or what we got. Yeah, that. The Prairie View A&M Panthers. In the 1990s, the Prairie View A&M Panthers lost 80 consecutive games, nearly doubling the second longest Division I losing streak held by Columbia. That would be 44. In 1991, the Panthers scored 48 points all season. Wow, this Hawks losing streak starting to look a little bit better now. Those are some crazy numbers. I mean, that's really insane. 80 consecutive games. They scored in 1991. The Panthers scored only 48 points the whole season. Man, that's brutal. Let's see. Got some people calling in. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We're talking about allegiance to sports teams and losing streaks. Here is Vicky on WGN. Hi, Vicky.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Hey, listen, I lived in Tampa in the 70s, and we know that Buccaneers lost how many games in a row was it? 0-14 the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And the next year, they went 0-14, but it turned into a 16-game season that next year in 77. So don't name me the first team they beat. Name me the second team they beat.
I can't name any of that.
They actually cut into the Channel 2 News in Illinois with Walter Cronkite to announce that the Buccaneers were about to beat the New Orleans Saints.
Is that right?
In the 1977 season, yes, because I moved up here from Florida.
Yeah.
And we had Walter Payton had just done his rushing record
sure,
the month before.
Sure, yeah.
And single game rushing record. And then they cut into the news, Walter Cronkite, and they beat the New Orleans Saints in the New Orleans. And the next year, and the next team, they won a two-game winning streak in 77,
wow.
Finally, after losing the first how many games was it?
28. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was the St. Louis Cardinals. That was the second team they beat.
Wow. That's amazing. I didn't know that. They actually cut in to announce that Tampa's going to win, they won a game.
Yes. CBS News. Walter Cronkite.
That is great.
Look it up.
That's a great story. That is great, Vicky.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. That's fantastic. They actually nationally broke in. Hey, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are about to beat the New Orleans Saints. All right, we have to break here. And we're going to come back. We got the news. And then after the news, we're going to talk with Fred Weintraub about what's going on with Theresa May and the no confidence vote. We'll get details from him. And then we'll jump back into the sports topic right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran will be here at 6 for your morning drive. Well, we will resume Wildcard Wednesday in a little bit here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we will get back to the losing streak and sports topics that we were talking about and get to your calls and your texts on that. But there's breaking news happening right now in Britain. And we're going to talk with Fred Weintraub, who is the UK correspondent for WCIU. His website is worldlyfellow.com. He is in London right now. And the breaking news is Theresa May is going to face, Prime Minister Theresa May is going to face a no confidence vote. And we want to get the latest. Fred, welcome to the show and thanks for joining us.
Nick, thanks for having me on. Good to be with you.
Absolutely. Give us the latest. What's happening there?
So the latest is that Theresa May spent all day yesterday outside of the UK. She started out her day in Berlin with Prime Minister, with Chancellor Merkel. She's trying to gain confidence anywhere in Europe to get further support for the EU. The real problem is she comes back to the UK slash 10 Downing Street, and this morning is presented with the news that there are 48 letters of no confidence, which is what you need in order for there to be a no confidence vote. What that means in straight talk is tonight in the UK between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. in Parliament, the parliamentarians are going to vote as to whether they have confidence for Theresa May to remain in office. She has to get 150 plus votes, half of her Conservative party, in order to remain prime minister. So it's like you have a major political issue in Brexit. They're negotiating this divorce. The divorce is basically saying, because there was a referendum that the UK had and Ireland had, which said 52 to 48% of the people said we want to be out of the EU because we think that we're stronger as a small island versus a bigger island, as a bigger union with the EU. Then you go through an entire process, which is really just a negotiation. It's like a divorce negotiation. How do you cut a deal with the EU that's good for the UK? And that's where the politics comes in. Now you add an additional stone, which is we may throw out our prime minister tonight because we're unhappy with how she's negotiating. Now, I would tell you that Theresa May is trying to live up to some extent to the letter of the law, which is the referendum said we want to be out. She's trying to get us out, but it's all a negotiation. On the other side, the EU is saying, we're kind of sick of you, Britain. We're kind of sick of your being a baby and playing these games. This is the deal that we've negotiated, and we're not budging from this deal. So she's really backed into a corner of Parliament, and we'll see tonight whether she remains as the prime minister or whether they move on to a different form of leadership.
And the Brexit is really sort of the main focus here on why this has happened, why she received the no confidence vote. And what's the feeling like in London right now? Because I know over the weekend, both sides took to the streets, that there were protests and people everywhere, and there's the right and the left, and they all have their ideas, and they took to the streets just this past weekend and for the past couple of days. What's the feeling like there?
So the feeling, if you walk towards Parliament and Parliament Square, you have a lot of people waving the EU flag and showing their signs that we either want to stay or we want to get out. They're really doing that because that's where all the national media is based, and they're all going live from that area. So right. They think if they can form this theater of we're screaming, we want to get out, and it gets on the air, that they're doing their thing, you know, that they're promoting their issue. The reality is, if you walk into other parts of London, it's very quiet. I think people are concerned. They're concerned like you'd be willing, we're concerned in America over whether our political system works. But as you know, if you turn on the BBC and they present it as there's mass bedlam going on, no, there's not mass bedlam going on in London. What's really happening is the pound is you know, keeps dropping. So if the pound is at $1.20, if the pound is at $1.26, that's the lowest it's been in about a year. It really boils down to the same thing that affects what affects people in America. Are we? If you're a Brit, are we going to be, you know, are we going to have a strong economy? Are we going to have a weak economy? Are we going to be able to survive? Is business going to be good? That's what people ultimately care about. So in their own quiet way, you know, there's not a ton of protesting all over London. And if you get into a cab or you go into a barber shop, and I love getting into cabs because cab drivers here and their black cabs will give it to you straight. And you ask them, what do you think of Brexit? They're going to tell you we're kind of sick of this whole issue. We don't trust our politicians. We understand that they're trying to negotiate this thing. And all we know that it's lousy for the economy. And the only people that want to come and visit here is tourists because they get more for the dollar. What the UK has to figure out is, are they stronger being, they're a little island, so are you stronger being, you know, part of a 28-member, what I would call a country club, where you have more ability to negotiate, or are you small, do you have more strength if you're on your own? So if you're, you know, if you're for Brexit, you think that you're stronger being on your own, but it brings its own set of problems, including a small minor divorce decree that says if you're not going to be part of the EU anymore, you need to come up with £39 billion or euros in order to get out of it.
Right.
So it all boils down to economic impact.
Right.
The drama is all really interesting. It's interesting that Theresa May comes out of 10 Downing Street, and that they're going to have this, they're going to take it to Parliament tonight. The worst thing that could probably happen, well, it depends what side you're on, but imagine in America if we were in the middle of, and some people might think we are in the middle of it, if you're in the middle of a crisis and all of a sudden we have the ability to say, let's change the government. That would be a bad thing, an unstable thing, and you got to look and say, what is the rest of the world thinking, looking at how we're operating? And you've got prime ministers here who are saying, we're embarrassed. We're embarrassed because we look around the world and we can only imagine what people are thinking about us. So tonight we'll know whether Theresa May has enough power to stay in office. If she does, no one can challenge her for at least a year.
Right.
If she doesn't, she could be out on January 21st, and then the entire process could start again, including, you know, they could say, you know, we want another referendum, and that could be another 2-year Brexit process. So in the end, I would say to you, the bottom line is, people are trying to figure out, was this a good thing to do 2 years ago? Are they sorry they did it? Would they like to take a mulligan as they could in golf and start this process again? Because maybe it wasn't thought out as well as it could have been.
Yeah.
Maybe the country is so divided that you've got people who are blue-collar that are looking down what they perceive as a black hole and saying, you know what, this government isn't working for us right now, so anything will be better. Then you've got professional white-collar people in certain parts of London that are saying, no, we're stronger to be part of the EU. So it's a great history. It's great drama. And in the end, like I said, it boils down to, will it put more money in people's pockets, or is it going to force in the short term this particular government to to crumble. And yeah. That's kind of it.
That's it. We're talking with Fred Weintraub, who is the UK correspondent for WCIU, and his website is worldlyfellow.com. Now, Theresa May is not without support. That's true, because I see that Chancellor Philip Hammond defended her. Environment Secretary Michael Gove has defended her. Is it possible before the vote tonight, before the no confidence vote tonight, is it possible for her to actually do some campaigning? Is that something that she's going to do in order to get more support before this vote?
Well, she was supposed to go to Ireland. She was supposed to go to Dublin today to try to gain support. She is not going to Dublin because she feels like everything is crumbling around her.
Right.
Yes. In specific answer to your question, yes, she has some support in government. Does she know whether she has enough conservative support to survive this no confidence vote? No one's going to know until 8 o'clock tonight when they take it, because it's a secret ballot in Parliament. Remember, Parliament is really one of the palaces here in the UK. So people are going to go into this. The ministers are going to go in tonight. There's going to be a private ballot that's going to be taken. It really is all politics. Do they believe that they're better off with her or without her? Mm. Right now, many of the prime ministers feel like she's not listening to them, specifically not listening to what the people want.
Right.
So her poll numbers are not great. Her support is not great, but anything can happen here tonight. And just with American politics, lots of things leak to the press in a manipulative kind of way that's
right.
happening right now.
Right.
And so you see both parties on the BBC saying she's out, she doesn't have a chance, and then you have people who are supporting her saying we will make it through this. She just went on the air saying I am going to be defiant with my last breath that I am not leaving, and I know what's best for the people of Britain, and I'm going to do what they wanted, which is we voted for a referendum, and now I have to execute it. Will it cost her her job? It might. It cost David Cameron his job as the former prime minister.
Yeah. Well, all eyes are going to be on Britain for tonight, and we'll keep tabs on it. Fred, I know that you're covering it over there. You're the UK correspondent for WCIU, and the website again is worldlyfellow.com. I really appreciate you taking the time to give us more details straight from London. I appreciate it, Fred.
Good to be with you.
Okay, take care. There you go. Fred Weintraub, everybody. And we'll keep our eyes on what's happening over there. Fred's covering it, and so are we in the newsroom. And we'll find out tonight whether or not Theresa May is going to step down as she faces a no-confidence vote in Britain. Okay. Our thanks to Fred. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll jump back into the topic that we were talking about before. We were talking about losing streaks in sports. And if you're not from Chicago and you support a different team in a different city, How do you do that? Is it fun? Is it frustrating? And 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it's Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? And that's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Emo requesting Bruce Springsteen with Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Again, that phone number, if you want to join us, is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We've been talking about longest losing streaks in sports. We'll get back to that. And we were talking about if you have allegiance to a team that's not from Chicago, what's that experience like for you? 312-981-7200. 847 says, does the Washington Generals 2,495-game losing streak count? Hey, they're coming to town. I just saw the commercial for it last night. Who are any of the now? Because all the guys that I grew up watching on the we were talking about the Harlem Globetrotters. Man. What was that? Krusty the Clown bet him. I thought the Generals were due. When I was growing up, it was like Curly Neal, Metalark Lemon. Those were the all stars. Do they still do the same shtick? Do they do the bucket with the confetti and the? You know what I'm talking about?
I believe
about?
So. Eileen went a couple years ago, and it sounded like it was the. I mean, you know, with new flair, but the old classics were there as well.
Yeah, you can't go to a Harlem Globetrotters game and not have the confetti, the bucket with the confetti that you think is water. That's classic bit right there. I guess the Washington Generals, I guess that losing streak would count. Yeah, they're going to play both places, both of the big arenas in the area. They're going to play in Rosemont at the Allstate. I always keep saying Rosemont Horizon. Allstate Arena, and then at the United Center. I bet they still get good crowds, right? You can bring the kids to it. It's a lot of fun.
Reasonably priced.
Yeah, it's interactive. You know, they bring it. You know, it's cool. But the Washington Generals, boy, what a terrible, terrible losing streak they're on. 2,495 games. I don't know if that's accurate. Cleveland Tom. As a transplant from West Lafayette, Indiana, it's hard being a Colts and Pacers fan in Cleveland. If there's a Browns game on CBS, the Fox affiliate won't even broadcast their game or vice versa. They'll show infomercials instead. Oh, that sucks. I've been able to find Hawks fans, and bars will change at least one TV for us. Cubs fans are now disliked as much as Sox fans here. I can, however, find Purdue games because of the Big Ten network. All right. So, 301 area code says, I'm in the Washington, D.C. area in terms of sports. Our hockey team had a fantastic season last year. Our football team has been disappointing for many years, on the other hand. Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin says, the Mets' first years were bad. Yeah. 231 area code says, would it be safe to say that the professional debut last year of the Golden Knights is perhaps one of the greatest first seasons in the history of all professional sports?
Yeah, I think that's very safe to say.
You know? I mean, they went all the way to the Cup, man. That was a storybook, and they're a great team, too. And they kill us this year. Haven't beat them yet. Haven't beat that team yet. Hawks have not beat that team yet. Talking about losing streaks. But yeah, no, that was like, you know, your old Cinderella story, you know. 231 area code says, I'm in Muskegon, Michigan, and I'm a huge Pittsburgh Penguin fan. Our minor league team was the farm team for the Pens from 1984 through 1992. A lot of the players who played here on the Pittsburgh teams that won the Stanley Cup in 1990 and 92, we had the same situation with the Islanders in the late 70s and early 80s. Go Pens! So, all right, we'll continue with this conversation. 312-981-7200, loyalty to your team if you don't live in that city, and the losing streaks continue. 312-981-7200. This song is a jam. it's Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday! 312-981-7200, Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin, barking dogs, jingle bells. How old is that? That's been around forever, the barking dogs jingle bell. Yeah, it's been around forever. Hear that every Christmas season. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We've been talking about losing streaks in sports because the Hawks are on one right now. And we'll get to hear all about it again when the Blackhawks Express comes up in a little while. But we want to hear from you. And on top of that, we're talking about people who are from a different city supporting the teams that aren't from Chicago while they're here. And what kind of pressure are they getting from friends and family? And how do they support them? And where do they go to watch the games and all that stuff?
1955 on the Barking Dogs.
Wow. 1955. Well, very cool. All right. 312-981-7200 for talking text. 312-981-7200. More texts here. Wild Bill says, I think Vince Lloyd was demoted to pregame and postgame in the early 80s to placate Milo Hamilton. God, you remember Milo? No, you wouldn't remember Milo Hamilton. Do you remember Milo Hamilton at all?
I do not.
Hey, Milo Hamilton, everybody. Originally hired to replace Jack Brickhouse for TV. Then they brought in Harry Carey and eventually made Milo Hamilton the main radio announcer. Vince Lloyd was much better. Yes, Vince Lloyd was much better, Wild Bill. How about Chip Carey? Now, you know, you remember Chip Carey, right?
Sure.
Belted! That was like his... Chip. Yeah, but Milo Hamble. Hey, I'm Milo Hamilton, everybody. He had that kind of, you know, that radio kind of a, you know, the affected voice. Had some hair, too. Milo Hamilton had some hair. I wonder, where did he go after the Cubs? I know he was, I can't remember how many years he was with the Cubs. That was, those were my high school years. Those were, the Milo Hamilton was the go-to guy in my high school years. Hey, I'm Milo Hamilton, everybody. How about the Cubs? 5740 code says, how about being a Bears fan in the late 70s, early 80s, when the only three plays they had was Peyton left, right, and Peyton up the middle?
Hamilton went to the Astros after the Cubs and stayed there until 2012.
Wow. Milo Hamilton with the Astros. All right. He must be retired now, though. I mean, 2012 is a long time. He was in the business for a long time.
Yep.
Not as long as Vin Scully, but, you know. All right. Yeah. Now, longest winning streaks in sports. Let's get back to that. The Towson Tigers, the losing streak in Division I men's basketball history is owned by, the longest losing streak is owned by the Towson Tigers, going over one calendar year without a win, including 28 consecutive conference losses. From December 29th, 2010, an overtime win against LaSalle, the Tigers would not win another game until January 28th, 2012, against UNC Wilmington. Jeez. How about the Caltech Beavers? Rick Greenwald's 2007 documentary film, Quantum Hoops, details Division III men's basketball Caltech Beavers' losing streak of 207 games, which is the all-time NCAA record. Since their previous victory in 1985, the Beavers went 26 years, 310 games, without a conference win, until the team won a conference game and against Occidental in February of 2011. The Caltech Beavers, 207 games. That's a record that I don't know if will be broken or not. See, these are some serious, serious, serious losing streaks. The Hawks are only at 8 right now, which is terrible, but it could be worse, judging by what we're hearing now. How about Wagner College? Wagner College owns the longest losing streaks in both NCAA men's Division I tennis, 59 matches from 2007 to 2012, and NCAA men's Division I lacrosse at 29 games. So not just one sport dominating in losing streak in the losing streak category. Wagner College in two sports. Tennis and lacrosse. And then we mentioned a little bit earlier, one of our callers called in, Vicky called in a little bit earlier to tell us about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. In 1976 and 1977, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers lost the first 26 games. From 1983 to 1986, the Buccaneers set an NFL record with 17 consecutive losing seasons. Jeez, that must have been really brutal trying to be a Buccaneers fan, right? Jeez. I mean, if Walter Cronkite has to bust into the, you know, nationally break into the news to let somebody know that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are finally going to win a game. Hey, Dan, is that audio around? Can we look that up and see if, like, Walter Cronkite announcing that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are about to beat the New Orleans Saints after going, like, 0-28 or something like that? Jeez. How about this? The Buffalo Bills. Well, this is one of the classic ones. Buffalo Bills from 1990 to 1994. The Buffalo Bills lost four consecutive Super Bowls to the New York Giants, the Washington Redskins, and to the Dallas Cowboys twice. Dan, you remember X-Files, right?
Sure.
Were you an X-Files fan at all?
I watched it here and there.
Yeah. I was one of those dorks. I was an X-Files dork. I watched it all the time. I love that show. One of my favorite things, you know, because, you know, people, you know, the X-Files is about conspiracy theories and, you know, cover-ups and the supernatural and that kind of thing. And are you familiar with the cigarette smoking man?
Yep.
Well, the cigarette smoking man is one of the leaders of the conspiracy and does the cover up and stuff like that. There was a line that they had in one episode of there's an actual line that they had in an episode of the X-Files where the cigarette smoking man when they're having a meeting, like a conspiratorial meeting, he's smoking a cigarette and he goes, I will say this though, as long as I'm here, the Buffalo Bills will never win a Super Bowl. That's an actual line. And this was the mid 90s too. As long as I'm here, the Buffalo Bills will never win a Super Bowl. I'm sure the people of Buffalo were thrilled with that line. I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was really funny. Obviously, very, very timely at that time. So, all right, more losing streaks. We're going to jump into that and more sports talk. If you want to talk about what it's like to be a supporter of a team that's not from this city, 312-981-7200. And more really, really, really terrible losing streaks are coming up right here on 720 WGN. Let's break for the weather, and then we'll come back and jump back into this. 312-981-7200. 847 area code requesting Bare Naked Ladies and Sarah McLachlan with God Rest You Merry Gentlemen. Boy, that really dates it, doesn't it? Those two artists working together? we were just talking about the X-Files, too. I got to get home and watch the X-Files, and then I'm going to go see Bare Naked Ladies and Sarah McLachlan. People love that version of that song. You know, every year when we play, you know, Christmas music and stuff as bumps and stuff, people love that version. Yeah, good version.
Mary Vandeveld loves that
song. Yeah, it's a really good version. Mary Vandeveld does love that one. All right. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, and we are 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Steve Grzanich coming up at 5. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, more terrible sports losing streaks here. The San Jose Sharks and the Washington Capitals. The Capitals and Sharks each own the NHL record with 17 consecutive losses. Well, the Hawks have to win 9 more, right? They have to lose 9 more then to tie that. The Capitals and Sharks were also involved in an odd coincidental losing streak with each other. On March 22, 2014, the Capitals defeated the Sharks 3-2 in a shootout, which marks the first Capitals victory in San Jose since 1993. That's the year that the Sharks set the dubious record. Wow. That is coincidence. Maybe the X-Files, maybe the cigarette smoking man was working on that one too. The Ottawa Senators in the Ottawa Senators 1992-93 re-inaugural season, the team set an NHL record with 38 consecutive road losses. Oof. Oh, man. That's brutal. How about this? Vince Spadea? Is that how you say it?
No clue.
From October 1999 to June 2000, professional tennis player Vince Spadea suffered a record losing streak of 21 consecutive losses. Poor Vince Spadea. Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cleveland Cavaliers franchise player LeBron James took his talents to South Beach after the 2009-2010 season. 2010-2011 was one of the worst seasons in Cavaliers franchise history, eventually landing the first overall pick in the 2011 NBA draft, Kyrie Irving. The low point of the first season for the Cavs was the team record, NBA record of 26-game losing streak. 26 games? Wow. Wow, the Cavaliers lost 26 games? Oof. The Kansas City / Sacramento Kings. From 1983 until this team finished with a 27-23 in a strike-shortened season, 1998-1999 season, the Kansas City / Sacramento Kings set an NBA record with 15 consecutive losing seasons. All right. Philadelphia Phillies. In 1963, the Philadelphia Phillies lost 23 consecutive games, which was one game shy of the all-time National League record held by the 1899 Cleveland Spiders. The Phillies would eventually finish the 1961 season with an overall record of 47-107. Oh, that's brutal. The Cleveland Spiders? That's a pretty cool name. Why did they ever change that? They should still be the Spiders. Wonder what their logo would be. Anthony Young. From May 6, 1992 to July 24, 1993, former Mets starting pitcher Anthony Young lost 27 consecutive decisions. And then finally, the Pittsburgh Pirates. From 1993 to 2012, the Pittsburgh Pirates set an MLB record with 20 consecutive losing seasons, the longest such streak in any of the four major North American professional sports leagues. Wow. 20 consecutive losing seasons. Here's Tom on WGN. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Nick. You were talking earlier about that Tampa Bay losing streak.
Yeah.
I lived just south of Tampa at the time, but I worked in and around the Tampa area. And we were going by one day. They were flagging you into the stadium, and the tickets were free. I mean, they just wanted people to get in there. And it was against the Bears, and the Bears were terrible, but it was still like a junior college team could have beat Tampa Bay those years, you know. Yeah. But there was only like 800 people at the whole game. They
man.
Put everybody. You got seating at the 50-yard line, so it looked like there was somebody there for the cameras, you know.
Right.
And they gave you a beer, so free parking, free tickets, and a beer just to come and watch them. They were that bad.
That's how
funny.
Bad they were. Free beer, free seats, free tickets. On the 50-yard line. That's amazing. And they played the Bears.
Yeah.
Who won the game?
Actually, the Bears won. Tampa was saying pathetic. They were embarrassed, the people from Tampa. I kind of laughed about it.
That's funny. That's great. All right, Tom, thanks, man.
All right. Hey, like your show.
Thank you, buddy. Take care. All right. Is that Walter Cronkite thing? Were you looking for? It's not out there.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not.
Oh, that's too bad. Because that would have been fun to actually play Walter Cronkite with the incredibly important breaking news that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were about to beat the New Orleans Saints.
My first football game ever professional was the Bears versus Buccaneers in that time, so early 90s, and they won, and there was a massive fight in front of us between some drunk Bears fans and drunk Buccaneers fans, so that was kind of interesting to watch as an 8-year-old.
Did the Bears win?
Yes.
Oh, they did. The Bears won, okay, but then there was a fight.
Yeah.
Jeez. Can you remember the biggest blowout that you ever attended? Can you remember a game that was like in any sport that was just like?
We attended a Hawks game we have usually an annually big Hawks Shagru night where we buy like 25 tickets and all sit together.
Yeah.
And they were up 6-0, I think, in the second. And so we were telling all the people who weren't hockey fans that, like, this is going to be a great game because you're seeing probably a Hawks win, but we're probably going to have a fight soon. And, there's going to be a lot of interesting activity in the next, period and a half.
Yeah. I remember one of the most memorable Hawks games that I ever went to. This isn't a blowout game, but we got there early. We got there real early. And my friends were mad because I was like, let's go really early. And we got there, and this was like even before the pregame skate, and they were playing Minnesota, okay? And we're up there, we're there, and we're at the Chicago Stadium and everything, and this is sort of a legendary game. I can't remember the date. I want to say it was in the 80s. Yeah, I think it was in the 80s. It was in the 80s. And we get there really early, and a fight breaks out on the ice, like a massive brawl, like Slapshot, kind of, like the movie Slapshot, which I'm showing, by the way, on Tuesday, January 8th. No officials on the ice. Nobody to stop it. And it turned into a massive brawl. And I think if you look up Minnesota and if you look up Minnesota and Chicago fight Chicago Stadium. It turned out, I mean, it was insane. And then all my friends were suddenly like, "Oh, I'm so glad we came early. I'm so glad we came early." Yeah. Who knew that this massive brawl was going to break out? So, all right. The news is coming up next, and then we're going to talk about school lunches here on WGN, and that's coming up right after this. Paul requesting some Tall Man, Jethro Tull. The Christmas song by Jethro Tull for Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text and wild card requests. Allstate Skyline Studio, that's where we are, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and my main man, Steve Cochran, at 6 for your morning drive. And welcome back. So, at the top of the show, Dan, I asked you the school lunch situation for you. Now, you said you split it down the middle. Sometimes you'd brown bag it. Sometimes you would actually have the lunch.
Right.
Was the difference for when you went to grade school? Where did you go to grade school again?
St. Robert Bellarmine.
And so did they provide
They did provide lunches if you wanted them. You mm-hmm. know, it was a hot lunch and a cold lunch.
Mm-hmm. So you had a choice between either one of them?
Yeah.
And then you went to Pat's.
Right.
And they provided lunch?
Yeah, they did at a cafeteria.
Yeah. Now, could you go off campus? In Pat's?
No, you were limited to on campus. Yeah,
that's where us too. We couldn't go because otherwise everybody would have gone to McDonald's every day.
We had a Mr. Subway across the street or down the street.
Yeah, right. I know exactly where that place is. But so the school lunches. What were the school lunches like when you were in school?
Yeah, you know, I vividly remember peanut butter and jelly because I didn't eat peanut butter and jelly as a kid, so that was one that stuck out. But it was a lot of just kind of the cold stuff was, you know, tended to be ham, you know, on a couple pieces of bread, a fruit cup, you know, things like that.
Yeah. Well, this is what we're talking about here. I want to hear you guys 312-981-7200. What were your school lunches like? And did you eat lunch at your school? And what were some of did you have a favorite? Did you have a favorite lunch? So both the elementary school where I went to Hamilton Public School at Cornelia and Palina, right here in Chicago, and then I went to Luther North High School, and both of them had cafeterias and provided food for us, and. I remember the food at Luther North was much better than the food at Hamilton. It wasn't great, but it was much better than the food at Hamilton. I remember the food at Hamilton not being all that great, and I'm assuming it probably wasn't the healthiest stuff because I went to grade school in the 70s, so you know, I mean, I'm assuming that they weren't really looking out for our health as much in the 70s, but. The only thing I remember, I've talked about this before, was they had the open-faced baked cheese sandwich, which I loved because it was the government cheese, and for some reason I really loved it. And whenever they had that on days when they had the open-faced baked cheese sandwich, which was just like a piece of white bread that was stuck in a broiler with a piece of government cheese on it, and then you know, and it would have like a little crust on it because the cheese would be it was open-faced, so it had a little crust on it, and I loved those. And I think you look back on it, it's probably terrible, but I really loved them. And so whenever, on the days when we had them, I made out like a bandit. Because nobody, all the kids would be like, ooh, and I'd be like, give it to me. That's the one thing that I remember. And we had, you know, the basic stuff, and it was all, you know, but we did have a choice of regular milk and chocolate milk. Which is why I bring this up, and I went. You know, every kid went for chocolate milk. I mean, who's going to go? I mean, I love, you know, white milk. I love, you know, the regular milk, but when you're a kid, you know, you want chocolate milk. Now, I would obviously opt for regular whole milk.
Yeah, I can't actually drink regular milk. I can only if I'm having it as a beverage. I can only have chocolate milk.
Is that right? Yeah. Have we ever discussed this before?
No.
What?
I mean, I don't drink a lot of milk, so, yeah. You know, I don't, you know, but yeah, since grade school, if I'm having it as a beverage, I usually go chocolate milk. I can't drink it straight.
Wow. That makes me sad.
You make up for it for me.
That makes me sad. I'll have an extra glass of milk today for you. Yeah, regular listeners, you know that I kind of I'm a little bit crazy about milk. I love it. I drink it with every meal. Except when I go to restaurants. Like if I go out to eat, I don't. But at whatever meal I'm having at home, even if I order a pizza or something, it's milk and it's whole milk. It's not the dishwater stuff. It's the real good stuff. So, but again, as a kid, you opt for the chocolate milk. And they used to offer that. And I remember they started this maybe when I was in sixth or seventh grade. They started offering breakfast. So if you get to this, if you get to the school early, you could go to the cafeteria and get breakfast. And this was sort of I remember this being a real big deal, like when they started offering this. And I'm not sure it was because Hamilton's a public school, so I'm not sure it was like citywide, or you know, I would imagine it may have been citywide, or if it was just a school by school thing. But I remember it being a big deal, and they would have you know like eggs and bacon and all that stuff. And I'm assuming that all, of course, wasn't very healthy either. But I would take advantage of that every once in a while, you know, because I was a latchkey kid, you know, both my parents worked. And so, like, you know, making a hot breakfast or something, I would sometimes, you know, in the morning I would have some cereal, you know, before school. But the idea of actually going to school and getting a hot breakfast, it seemed like a really good idea at the time. So we took advantage of that. I remember there being some pretty long lines in the cafeteria, being pretty full early in the morning for the breakfast. So, but here's the reason I bring this up. The USDA rolls back Michelle Obama's school lunch regulations, bringing back biscuits and low-fat chocolate milk. The U.S. school lunch program is making room on menus again for noodles, biscuits, tortillas, and other foods that have refined grains. The Trump administration is scaling back contested school lunch standards implemented under the Obama administration, including one that required only whole grains be served. The U.S. Department of Agriculture said Thursday only half the grains served will need to be whole grains, a change, it said, will do away with the current bureaucracy of requiring schools to obtain special waivers to serve select refined grain foods. Low-fat chocolate milk will also be allowed again. Previously, only fat-free milk could be flavored, although that rule had been temporarily waived. A final goal for limiting sodium will be scrapped as well, and the students at the schools will still be required to meet reduced sodium targets. The School Nutrition Association, which represents local cafeteria operators and companies like Domino's Pizza, Kellogg, and PepsiCo, had called for relaxing the whole grain only requirement, saying it was too difficult for some districts to meet. Diane Pratt-Hevener, a spokeswoman for the association, said whole grain bread and buns generally aren't a problem, but she said students complained about other items, in this case because of cultural or regional preferences. Finding whole grain biscuits and grits that students like are a challenge in the U.S. South, she said, while tortillas are a challenge in the Southwest. Not everyone welcomed the relaxed rules. The American Heart Association encouraged schools to stay the course and commit to meeting the stricter standards of what went into effect in 2012. Center for Science in the Public Interest also said the decision to roll back the whole grain requirement makes no sense because most schools were already in compliance. Those still struggling to meet the standard would have eventually been able to comply as well, said Colin Schwartz, the center's deputy director of legislative affairs. For the current school year, the USDA said 20% of schools were applying for exemptions to the whole grain rule. Pasta, tortillas, biscuits, and grits were the commonly requested items for exemption. The USDA school lunch program provides low-cost or free lunches in public schools and other institutions. Last year, it served an estimated 30 million children. Brandon Lips, deputy secretary for the USDA's Food and Nutrition Division, said that at some schools that only serve the whole grain foods, some of it is wasted if students won't eat it. In those cases, schools might now consider other options. The USDA defines whole grain rich foods as being at least 50% whole grain. So they rolled back some of this stuff, and you know, some people are fans of it, some people aren't. But I wanted to talk about just school lunches in general. What was it like in school, whether it be elementary or high school? What was your food options like? And do you remember specific school lunches? Like, for instance, does anybody else remember the open faced baked government cheese sandwich, which was my favorite? So 312-981-7200 for talking text. 312-981-7200. Let's break for the weather here. And here's your Chicago weather forecast. For today, a wintry mix in the morning. A little sunshine possible in the afternoon and a high near 35. Tonight, mostly cloudy and low around 26. Tomorrow, showers, high near 42. Friday, more showers, high of 43. Saturday, mostly cloudy and a high near 40. It's currently 33 degrees at O'Hare. It's 34 at Midway, 34 downtown. All right, let's take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll jump into the school lunches. We have a few lines open if you would like to jump in. 312-981-7200, reminiscing a little bit about our favorite and maybe the worst or the best school lunches. Am I the only one that finds it kind of creepy that Susie Snowflake shows up, starts tapping on your window in the middle of the night? Is that just me? tapping on your window pane? Why? I didn't invite you. It's Wild Card Wednesday. You made Wild Card Wednesday wild. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Nick DiGilio here. We're here till 5 o'clock. The 815 area code requesting, here comes Susie Snowflake tapping on your window in the middle of the night, freaking you out. Like that kid in the Salem's lot tapping on the window. Floating outside to get the kid's window, tapping on it. That's Susie Snowflake of Salem's Lot. All right. There have been some changes made to the school lunch program here in America, and we've been talking just in general about your memories about school lunches. What were your favorites? What do you remember? And we want to get your thoughts on that. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Okay, this is the bakery guy. All right, it's the bakery guy. Hello, bakery guy.
Morning. In the late 60s at Luther North, hot dog and mashed potatoes. Or you had two open-faced English muffins with stuff on top called pizza.
Ah, yes. We used to have those. We had those, too, like the pizza muffin. Back there. I went from 79 to 83. So the lunches might have been a little bit different than that, because it was like almost 20 years later. But
yeah, I escaped in 70.
He escaped in. You know, it's closed now, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's too bad. I feel sad about that. But
I believe one of my former classmates was the principal.
Oh, is that right?
Wyman?
Yeah, Wyman. Tom Wyman.
Yeah.
He was one of my favorite teachers. I love Mr. Wyman. Yeah. All right. Thanks, bakery guy.
All right. Talk to you later.
Okay, see ya. The bakery guy. That's what he... Yeah, Mr. Wyman was, when they closed down the school, he eventually was principal. And he was a teacher that I had. I used to drive him nuts. Oh, man, did I drive him nuts. He's friends with me on Facebook. I have a few Luther North teachers that are friends with me that I had when I was in high school that are friends with me on Facebook. Like four, five, six of them. It's pretty cool. I don't think my favorite teacher is on Facebook. My favorite teacher of all time is Ann Rundio. She's my favorite teacher. She was the toughest teacher I ever had. I hated her when I was in school, but it took me a little while to realize how great she was, and she's the best teacher I've ever had. Ann Rundio. I remember when I went back to speak to the students at graduation. I know that sentence sounds insane, that they would have me come back and speak to students at a graduation. But I went back and I did a speech for a graduation. Probably about 11, 12 years ago when I went. And she wasn't there, and I was very upset because I wanted to see her. She was still teaching. She taught. See how well she taught me? She was an English teacher, too. So there's proof that she taught me well. She taught all the way up until that school closed. She was there. And so when I was speaking to the students, I was like, how many people have Miss Rundio? And they raised their hand, and I'm like, she's tough, right? And you could just hear a groaning throughout the entire gymnasium of these students who clearly had the Miss Rundio experience that I had. Yeah, toughest teacher I ever had, man. Everything I wrote, whenever we'd have to write like a composition or an essay or something, those margins would be filled with red ink. It was just you'd look at it and go, oh my god, you know, she would have a field day, man. And man, her class was so tough, but she the best teacher I ever had. Here's David on WGN. Hey, David.
Hey, David. Who are you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, great, great. My pleasure to be here. And to all my fellow listeners, I went to Alexander Graham Bell back in the 1960s, and we had a lunchroom there. And I went there up until seventh grade. And as far as the food, well, one thing, they didn't know how to make meatloaf very well. Of course, you know, my mom's meatloaf was the best.
Yeah.
And they didn't seem to know how to make mashed potatoes very well either, because most of the time they were all runny and, you know, watery.
My guess would be, David, is that they were powdered. That would be my guess.
Yeah, I guess at that time they did have powdered mashed potatoes. Now, the other thing, the Sloppy Joe sandwich is wonderful. Very good. I was introduced to Sloppy Joe's when I was there at Bell.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the other dishes they had were pretty good. And you could have seconds if you wanted it. That was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you had to buy your desserts. Like, you know, my favorite thing to buy was ice cream sandwiches. And that's how I was introduced to ice cream sandwiches, too.
So you got introduced to Sloppy Joe's and ice cream sandwiches through your school. There's something about that I like. I like that. David, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. That's pretty cool. Let's see. 312 area code says, I remember there was some kind of budget crisis in the 70s, and we were fed powdered eggs for a few weeks. That was at Yon High School at Belmont and Walcott. I know exactly where that is. I used to hang out in that neighborhood all the time. I think we went through the powdered eggs, too. And I know that, like, if there was mashed potatoes, I'm positive that they were powdered. I'm positive. 781 area code says, ring dings were my favorite lunch item, really. No, that's healthy. Hi. What'd you have for lunch, honey? A couple packages of ring dings. Oh, good. Good. That's a nice balanced meal right there. A couple packages of ring dings washed down with some chocolate milk. 847 area code says, pizza pita pockets. They were the best. 25 years later, still haven't found that exact flavor. I yearn for one more bite, Nick. Maybe it's the government cheese. I'm telling you. It might just be the government cheese. All right. We are going to take a break here on 720 WGN. And we got a bunch of texts coming in. We want to hear from you. You can call us. The phone lines are open. 312-981-7200. We are reminiscing about our childhood school lunches and meals that we would have, and what was good. And again, I put it out there. Did anybody have the open face baked government cheese sandwich that was such a popular item with me, not with anybody else, but just with me? So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The news is coming up after this. Welcome back. Trucker Rich playing Gary Hoey. I'll Be Home for Christmas instrumental. He also said that Spike Odell would play it a lot this time of year. Hey, by the way, Spike Odell's going to be on with Steve Cochran. 7:40 this morning. Make sure you tune in. Hear from Spiker. Yeah! 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We have a very unfortunate Blackhawks Express. I just keep saying that same sentence over and over and over again. They lost their eighth in a row last night, which is why we were talking about longest losing streaks in sports. And, we'll play that back coming up in just a little bit. But right now we're talking about there have been some changes made to school lunches in America. And we wanted to talk just about your memories of school lunch, what you were offered, what you ate, what was your favorite, maybe what was the worst. And the breakfasts that were sometimes offered as well, because, like I said, you know, we had the preschool lunch or breakfast program that you could go and take advantage of, too. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And let's see. 7730 area code says, hopefully Dan is not teaching your children about only drinking chocolate milk. I have a niece that's 34 and will only drink chocolate milk to this day and will never drink white milk. She will only have water if she can't get chocolate milk. Your kids drink milk, right?
Yes, yes. And it chocolate milk is only a special treat when they're at grandma and grandpa's house. Otherwise, it is.
It's regular milk.
Regular milk.
Okay. Yeah. Paul says, at Heartland Grade School, we had pizza burgers. It was half a hamburger bun with ground beef, pizza sauce, and cheese. They were great. Yeah, the good old pizza burgers. 815 area code. I remember pizza in junior high would require about 100 napkins to blot the grease off the top. That's one of my favorite. That's one of my favorite things is when you go to get a piece of pizza or something, you get a slice of pizza, and you've got to get like 14 napkins to blot that out. There was a I wonder if it's still there. Is it Gigio's in Evanston? And there's one in Uptown. It's Gigio's, I think. Gigio's Pizza in Evanston. I want to say it's right off. It was right by the train stop, right by the L stop.
1001 Davis Street.
That's it. It's on Davis, right? Yeah, that was Gigio's. That was a slice of pizza. You go there because I used to work in Evanston for a couple of years, and during my lunch hour, there were places that you could go, obviously, in Evanston, and I ended up going to Gigio's pretty regularly. And that was a you need napkins to sop up the grease pizza. 312 area code says, I went to Maine North High School in the 70s. They did have a breakfast club. The hamburgers were definitely not 100% beef. It was probably some sort of soy mixture, but I liked them. To this day, I have no problem with veggie burgers and the like. Besides, by the time you end up putting all that ketchup and mustard and relish on it, they're not exactly, they don't taste much different anyway. 708 area code says, I went to high school in Central Illinois. The rectangle government pizza was the best. I always get two pieces. It also came with a little square brownie and a small salad with vinegar salad dressing. In the fifth grade, I worked in the cafeteria so I could get free brownies and pizza. It's funny, for some reason, man, you know, the government food, we enjoyed it when I was a kid. I enjoyed it. Like, here's a guy, the rectangle government pizza was the best. It's got to be that cheese. I'm telling you, there's something very, very special about the government cheese. Adam in Rockford said, the last day before Thanksgiving break, school would do a turkey gravy, mashed potatoes, corn, and they only served it that one day of the year. 815 area code said, we had the same pizza for 12 years. It was rectangle and it fit perfectly on the lunch tray. More texts coming in. 312-981-7200. Susan said, I went to St. Peter and Skokie in the 60s. We had hot lunches made by ladies in the parish and bakery bread sandwiches. Wow, is it fresh bread? They were baking fresh bread? Wow. 219 area code says, Nick, I never had the sandwiches at school, but my mom would make them at home. You would get that big, awesome brown bubble on top that would make them so crispy, and then you'd pop it. Yeah, that's what we're talking about, the open-faced baked cheese sandwich. But what, you know, you can make them at home and everything, but there was something special about that, you know, the baked open-faced baked cheese sandwich because of the government cheese. It had a whole different taste to it. And again, I was like the only one who liked it. Only, I was the only one. You know, when I went back to Luther to speak, they had shut down the cafeteria. So for the last, I don't know how many years, maybe the last like 8-9 years of Luther North's existence, they shut the cafeteria. There's no cafeteria. They had vending machines and stuff. You could bring food, obviously. You can bring a lunch. But they just had stuff in vending machines. And we had a lot. I mean, you know, when I went to Luther, we had the regular cafeteria with the kitchen and, you know, hot lunches and stuff. But we also had vending machines where you could get pop and stuff. Do they still have that? And are kids still
there was a movement that like to eliminate that stuff from being easily accessible. You can bring it in, as you mentioned, but I think the vending machines, you know, right outside the cafeteria are no longer
stocked with that the sugary drinks and all that that other stuff. But we used to have them when I went to high school. We had we had like a candy machine and a pop machine and in the caf, so you could get pop if you wanted it. But I remember who used to do continuing stories about this topic about school lunches. It was a concern of hers. Monica Eng, who wrote for the Tribune and appeared on my show. She was a regular on my show. Would do an entire series every year on school lunches. She has kids, and at the time those kids were going to school, and were being offered these lunches, and she would grade the lunches. Like she would, check out the lunches and see what they had to order, or what they had to offer, and see how much of it were healthy options and stuff like that. It was a pretty fascinating series that she did, and very enlightening. And it was really interesting because how much it varied from school to school. That's the other thing. It's like, maybe if it's a Chicago public school, it's pretty, maybe it's standard, because all these people who are talking about the square pizza, we had that. I mean, it was the same thing. I'm sure it was the same product that was used in every public school. But if you go to like a private school or something else, I assume that the food that they have is different, and it varies from school to school. And that's what Monica would write about how almost sometimes hugely different the quality and the offerings are from one school to another. And she did a piece about those vending machines too. She felt very strongly about that stuff. So, because she's a real foodie, Monica. Let's see. 815 area code said, I teach in the western suburbs, and before Mrs. Obama promoted healthy lunches, our cafeteria said ketchup was a vegetable and served Skittles for dessert. Ketchup is a vegetable, huh? It falls under the guise.
I think one of the workarounds was that pizza was made of vegetable as well.
Right. All right. We got more texts coming in and more memories about the food that you ate when you were a kid at school. 312-981-7200 if you want to call in or text. We'll wrap up that topic after we take a break here for the weather and for yet another unfortunate Blackhawks Express. Their eighth loss in a row, and we'll hear the Express coming up in just a couple of minutes. All right. How you doing? It's Nick DiGilio. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We are here until 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. A couple more texts here, closing out the topic that we were talking about, school lunches and remembering those. Canadian Bill says, we had the usual food at school, like hamburgers you couldn't eat because they were so greasy. In the cafeteria, we had a smoking room for those in the 12th grade. You know, my freshman year at Luther, there was a smoking area right outside the cafeteria. Like if you wanted to smoke, it stopped. That stopped though my sophomore year. But freshman year, kids could stand outside the cafeteria window right in front of the cafeteria. It was the designated smoking area. Could you imagine that now? If they had smoking areas for kids? Let's see. 219 area code says, I went to Loyola Academy the same year as that you went to Luther. For breakfast, it was warm chocolate chip cookies and milk. Oh, boy, that's a healthy breakfast right there. You got all your food groups represented there. For lunch, it was bad cheeseburgers and bad pizza. I loved them. I'd eat the cheeseburgers with crushed Doritos on them. Oh, my God. Coincidentally, for years, I owned a bungalow on Hutchinson behind the Orthodox Church on Central. We used to go to Demetrio's, Toots, and Johnny's. I still miss that house. Yeah. Demetrio's, man, we were there every night in the 80s. Every night. 815 area code says, the old St. Rita High School had the best mashed potatoes and gravy. The potatoes were scooped with an ice cream scooper. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's what they did, yeah. And you could also order French fries and dip. It was fantastic. Wow. All right. Let's see. 847 area code says, at Maine South High School in Park Ridge in the late 70s, they had four separate lunch lines. There was a pizza line, a hamburger line, a junk food line, and a balanced meal line. Nobody went to the balanced meal line. That's not a shock at all. Hey, Nick, I remember being frightened by the orange salad dressing known as French in my school lunch. I never wanted to try it because the color always freaked me out. But go figure, now as an adult, I like it. All thanks to my school lunches. Yeah, French dressing is good. It's tasty. Jay says, at Mount Carmel grade school, hot lunch was hot dog day and sloppy joes and chips. That's what it was. All the healthy stuff again. 608 area code says, we would leave campus and go to Taco John's or Burger King. At Oak Lawn High School in the 60s, we had great spaghetti and peanut butter cookies. And then finally, 815 area code says, at Cary Grove High School, we had a hot lunch line and a pick what you want line. We also had a milk booth. I would get the hot lunch and supplement it. My friend would get a large chocolate milkshake and two bags of barbecued chips every day for lunch. You got to keep it healthy, everybody. All right. All right, let's take a break. Dan, tomorrow we'll have Man Fighting Bear, the band.
Yep.
Live in studio. Okay, that's coming up tomorrow, but the news is up after this.